and welcome to the Computer Game Show. My name's David Turner. I'm here with Sean Bell.
Hiya.
With Matt Murray.
Hiya.
And with James Farley.
Why are we doing this? What's that?
Why are we doing what?
No, I'm not doing anything. That's just how I talk, James. That's not...
Yeah. And the way I said your name is just how you talk, James. So get used to it. It's a special show this week. It's the Game of the Year 2017 podcast. I'll explain the rules in a bit, but we've got a little bit of feedback to get to. We're going to bullet point it because, my word, there's been a lot. And we need to get to the Game of the Year podcast because this is going to be a long night. Firstly, let's get the James bit out of the way. Since we last recorded, James bought the FIFA on the PS4 again and has since sold it again.
What? Hang on. I know you bought it again, but you since sold it again.
I sold it again, yeah.
What is wrong with you, James?
I don't know. I've had a breakdown over this.
It was bad enough that you bought it, but you've since sold it since you told us that it was mental that you bought it.
I know. Because I bought it on the Friday and then I sold it on the Saturday and I don't know what's going on anymore.
What? Why?
It was a one-day turnaround.
I know.
Fucking hell.
Go on, explain yourself.
I don't know. I don't know what I was doing, honestly. I don't know what was going on. I just thought,
James, are you fine? Why did you sell it?
What is it? What's going on?
I was thinking, I'll just get this and I'll see what Alex Hunter's, I'll finish his game, finish the story because I didn't finish it before.
His game? James, have you had a bang on the head?
I don't know what happened. I don't know what happened. And it's just.
Do you know what it is? I know exactly what it is, right? Because he's getting this Henry VIII stuff has gone to his head.
What are you talking about?
And now he feels like he's like manipulating, like he's got power over EA. I've bought your game. Ooh, get your hopes up and we've sold it again, EA. Your face is in my hands. You're sick.
I wish it was that. It's just, I don't know what's going on. And I mean, I'm just done. I'm done with it. I'm not going to buy another copy of the game. I mean, I bought, I think, 4 or 5 copies of that game this year. And that's...
You are crazy.
But let's work it out. So you bought the Switch version, you sold it. You bought the PS4 version, you sold it. You bought the Switch version, yeah. Then you bought the PS4 version and sold it.
Yeah.
So, yeah, 4 copies of the game that you bought. That is fucking insane.
It's insanity, and I don't know what's going on. And it's not going to happen anymore. I'm done with it. It's
okay, yeah. Fine. Talking about being done with it. Matt, you've had a bad week, mate, haven't you? You've had
This has probably been the worst week to be Matt Murray ever.
The listeners don't know the half of it. To start with... And you wouldn't have known, because if there's one thing that I'm proud of in my life, it was the edit of last week's show. Genuinely, genuinely, I was so proud of that edit. I come away from it thinking, do you know what? There was a couple of mistakes in there, but no one picked up on the fact that there was a huge problem last week. And that was that Matt didn't do a test recording and he fucked his audio up.
No, that's not true. I did do a test recording.
No, Matt. It is true, isn't it? How could you have possibly done a test recording and heard what come out of those, out of that recording? How could you have possibly tested that and said, yeah, that's fine, even though it was like there's huge humming in the background, but you're clearly on your internal mic?
I definitely had to restart Audacity because... So I made on a test recording, that was fine. When I went to press record, it said... there's an error of some sort. I restarted it, and then maybe...
And then you didn't bother doing another test recording. You might as well have done a test recording 2 years ago. Oh, fuck it, I did it then. It's probably fine now. We've been through this. James has been through the mill. You're lucky. Yeah. You're very, very lucky that it's the Game of the Year show, and we've got stuff to talk about. But that was insane.
I'm very, very lucky that I've made numerous other mistakes this week.
It was a masterful edit where I switched between the 3 of our recordings and the backup. So every time you heard Matt talk or Matt talk over someone, it was from the backup. Everything else was the 3 local recordings with Matt silent, cut out. And it took me ages. And there's Matt going, oh, sorry, mate. I wanted to kill you last week. but I thought it come out well.
Yeah,
apart from the moment where
job.
It sounded like I went into a different dimension. Apart from that, for that one word, it was okay. We got away with it, so you're lucky. But what else has been happening in the world of Matt Murray?
Well, in the follow-up notes, everything is something gate. We'll start with Serial Gate.
PS
Davies. Just got to new Super Mario Serial part of Computer Game Pod. Genuinely shocked by such craven behaviour. Poor Harry. Hashtag theft.
This was for those that didn't listen when a listener decided to send me a box of Mario Serial, and instead of telling me about this tweet, Matt stepped in and said, I'll have it, and then sent him his address and everything. Have you got that box yet?
Well, no. It wasn't to you. It said basically, oh, if the main one wants a box of cereal, here it is. I left it for a few days, and then I thought, well, I feel bad for this guy sending us a message. No one's responded. He's done a nice thing out of the kindness of his heart.
And instead of saying, Dave, there's a message for you on Twitter, you said, I'll have it.
Yeah, I don't know. Honestly, I don't know why I didn't do that. But
see, that's the thing. I still don't understand why you didn't like discuss this with us. Like, you just went ahead with it. This is the disgusting thing about it. Because I'm just also wondering, like, what other stuff you've had and maybe, like, delete the
James,
evidence.
You're repeating your lines. You literally said that word for word last week.
It's true, James.
It's true, but I'm still kind of shocked by it. It's like, you know.
Yeah, so still on last week's notes, are you, James?
Steady on, Matt. There's a lot of things coming.
I can't believe the loot boxes. Oh, no, wait, sorry.
Listen, this week we all need allies, so let's not fall out yet.
Yes, sorry. Okay, anyway.
Sean, let them fall out, mate. I've got a feeling our games are going to go quite far.
Anyway, basically, everyone hates me. The most hated person on the pod since Farley, basically. So, what's that, 2 weeks? That hasn't been fun. Next, not enough to do with me, but there's also a parent gate. That was people talking about our what they call refreshing feedback about being parents. Darren and Gar get quite refreshing hearing Computer Game Pod's honest views on parenting. Not enough light shone on its challenges and how hard they could be. It's reassuring through some rough nights lately, and there's some other parents who got in touch saying really refreshing to hear Sean's comments about parenthood. It's not super easy, but it is worth it ultimately. Then had an email about Destiny 2.
Did you just
chuck
that in there to break up your, like, the abuse you've been getting? Oh, I'll just break it up. I'll slow it down. Otherwise, it's just constantly punched in the face.
It's non-stop abuse, so I wanted to, like, break it up with some nice bits. We also got an email, a really nice, really massive email from Matt King about Destiny 2 and about its end game being great or not so great. Matt, we'll come back to your email in the new year, probably, but thank you ever so much for your email nonetheless. FIFA 18 gate is the next one. Sean Thomas, bit surprised FIFA 18 didn't make it into James's list, considering how many copies he bought. And that's increased. That's increased even since his tweet was sent.
Yeah, yeah. It's a fair point. Yeah, it's terrible.
Yeah. I mean, so none of the copies entered into your gaming list.
No, what's your top four games of the year, James? Well, FIFA 18, FIFA 18, FIFA 18, and also FIFA 18.
And that's just the PS4 versions. Sean Gate was the next thing. Mike Petit, got to say, it's lovely having Captain Toss back on Computer Game Pod. It's always good. This next line, I don't quite get this, but I'll say anyway. It's always good, but he elevates it back to Pick of the Week stuff.
I mean, he means so the show's always good, but when I'm on, it's now elevated back to being like one of his favourite podcasts.
That was Mike Petit 89.
Mike, no one understands what you're saying.
Cheers,
mate.
Small Mike.
Mike, no one understands you, mate. Let's get that sorted for next week, eh? Or next year, whatever.
Tendo P, good to have Sean back, even if it is only for two episodes. Hope fatherhood's treating you well. The last
cheers, man.
Gate. Oh no, actually, there's many more gates. But the our last main gate is Draft Gate. We might as well go into the draft for the.
Let's go through the list. Right, I'll explain the rules first. I have in front of me 16 games written down on bits of paper. I will screw them up, I will put them in a bowl, and we'll pick them out one by one. And they'll be facing off against each other to move on in a football-style tournament, and ultimately it'll result in a final where there's only two left. Yeah, and the only way a game can progress through to the next round is by receiving three votes. It could be four. But three or four votes, it can't be two. If it's two apiece, then we have to argue it out between us to see what goes through to the next round. By the end, we'll have a final two games left, and whoever wins that game is crowned our game of the year 2017, right? That's how this process works. Last week, we all brought four games to the table to create our list of 16, and Matthew Murray absolutely fucked it. I mean, beyond fucked it. We called him out on one of his choices because it was a 2016 game, and then people had to point out that another one of his games was a 2016 game, Super Hot VR, which made it onto the list.
Yeah, Super Hot VR. So that came out in late December on
2016.
Oculus. Came out this year on Vive and PSVR.
Right.
It came out after last year's Game of the Year show.
So it doesn't matter.
And I think late December games.
It doesn't matter. No, none of that was agreed. We said it's got to be a 2017 game.
Well, yeah, but we agreed that was one on the list. So
Matt, you fucked.
We
it.
Did agree that it
you
was one on
made
the
a
list.
Mistake.
We did agree that he was one on the list. I'll give you that. So, what else were people saying about the list? It wasn't just that one that people were angry with you about.
No, we had. So, it's probably worth talking about the actual listener's choice one first, and then we'll get into feedback.
Well, no, do the listener's choice last because then we can. So to further explain, the listeners have been voting on what game we missed out on that should be on the list. The ultimate winner of that is then going to replace one of the games on our list.
No, it's going to replace
and we've
Matt's
got
game.
To vote which one's we gone. Well, we'll see. We'll see. We'll get to that. We'll get to the arguing later. Don't jump the gun. Matt, sorry, continue.
So, yeah, obviously our 16 were chosen and there were tons of other suggestions. 26 other games, in fact, got suggested as one of the listeners' choices, the games. But the top four, the ones with the most votes, were Horizon Zero Dawn with 19 votes, Resident Evil 7 with 14, Prey and PUBG. Those were the top four. Cuphead and Hellblade, those both have 7 votes, so they just missed out. And Splatoon 2, they also had 6 votes, so they just missed out as well. But Horizon, Resident Evil, Prey and PUBG were the top four. And then, yeah, we had a poll on Twitter over the last day, and we'll reveal that in a second, I guess. But in terms of feedback, James Carter started the ball rolling. Stardew Valley not being eligible. Superhot VR was released last year too.
Yep.
Came to PSVR, but Oculus was 2016. Ben Simon, Scientologist. To be fair to the Dirty Thief, it was December 16 and 17 on everything else, such as Vibe, not just PSVR. Mid/end December games need a chance on lists somehow. I mean, I agree. Ben Naylor, I would say allow it, but he now is still serial from children.
It's true.
So
yep. You've done yourself no favours.
And that's when it kicks off, really. Rich Spurs 24. There's an argument to be had that you can replace all four of Matt's choices with the four in the poll.
I'd be in favour of that. That's a good idea.
That was such a good shout. Because
James Carter.
do you want to mention which of the four? Have I listed them yet? No, I'll list them later, but I'll point out which ones are Matt's. It won't be hard. Look for the ones where you go, huh?
just talking about that, right? Clearly, Zelda and Mario, those are like two favourite games of the year, but other games got chosen, so I wanted to find something which is a bit more left field.
But there were quite a few good games out this year. Matt, there were quite a few good games out.
I've
got the words Farpoint written in front of me. I mean,
and that was one of my favourite experiences of the year, no doubt.
Okay,
but we'll come on to that.
To be fair, it is one of the games that he actually finished. But go on.
Ooh. Cutting. James Carter, easily 30 games could make their way onto a shortlist, I reckon. Farpoint, not so much. Dangleberries, Arms, it's a tragedy none of you have played it, as it should be the computer game show game of the year 2017.
Yeah, and
Matt's
Let me make that clear as well. We ain't going to put in games that we haven't played, and unfortunately that means that certain games suddenly, you know, they don't make it onto the list. And I think Arms is one of them. Everything I've heard about Arms from people that have played it have said it's absolutely incredible. There were some games that I'd never even heard of that people were saying, how is this not on your list? Well, it's not on our list because we haven't played it. And also, when I was looking at this poll, there was a couple of games on there that I don't think any of us had played. And I was like, well, don't vote for that one to go in because it ain't going to get anywhere. You know what I mean? You've got to use your brain, listeners. You've got to use your brain.
Yeah, Dangleberries. Matt's choices are all a waste of time, aren't they? Resi 7 deserves to be in there, and maybe Everybody's Golf and Splatoon 2.
Oh my God, Everybody's Golf! Yeah, that didn't make the list.
Athene Allen, Farpoint, fuck me, Matt's a disgrace. Darren Gargett, no Resi 7 but Flashpoint. Fuck me, I thought Matt knew about VR. I mean, I'd only played the Resident Evil 7 demo. If you want me to put in Resi 7 demo in as Game of the Year, then by all means, but I'm not going to do that because I haven't played enough of it.
Did you actually play the demo as well, Matt? Because I thought you said you were too scared when we were up visiting you.
No, well, he did play it afterwards. Yeah, no, I remember him saying that he played.
Yeah,
I don't know if you completed the demo though. Did you?
I completed demo. Yeah, I ran out the door. Yeah, which is a way to finish the demo, thankfully. Pork Chop Express, and then he does like a laughing emoji and says, "Rhyme though." Like, right, we'll get on to that. We'll get on to that.
Yeah,
Ben Syme, is Matt all right? Look at the state of these gotty choices. Indiana 747. The fact Farpoint is in and we have to vote to get Resi 7 in is a damn indictment of Matt's choice of gaming this year. The Shend. Matt, where is Sonic Mania? Unacceptable. Hand in your Sega badge on your way out.
Did you play much Sonic Mania in the end?
I played 5 hours, I think, is what my Switch says. Athene Allen. Resi not winning this is a disgrace. Meanwhile, Farpoint and Superhot VR are in the no bother. Matt has a lot to answer for.
Have you got a statement to make, Matt? How are you going to address all this feedback? Because you need to come back with something. We can't just move on.
Well, what needs to be said? The idea was we take turns to choose games of the year. Games like Mario and Zelda had all been chosen by the time it got to me. I wanted to choose games where I knew none of you guys would, but I wanted to shine a light on games like Farpoint, which I think is a fantastic experience. Superhot VR. I mean, you know, there's a bit of a grey area, I guess you could say. But, I mean, you know, there's loads of games I would have chosen first had I had the option to do that, but the bigger ones have been taken.
When you say loads of games, do you just mean Zelda and Mario?
And other ones on the list, certainly.
Like, but what? Because your first choice was Rhyme. Edith Finch was picked after Rhyme.
Is one of the games of the year, Dave.
Okay, but your first choice was Rhyme. The only ones picked before that was Zelda, Mario, and Destiny.
Yeah,
so you're saying that no other game... So Rhyme was number one for you after those three?
Definitely, yeah. Well, it would have been in front of Destiny, but it would have been in the conversation of the other two, definitely.
Right.
It probably would have been number three behind them two.
Okay. All right. Okay, look, it's your choice. You get to do what you want.
Exactly, it is my fucking choice.
I know,
and
but
I don't give a fuck about
no, like, part of this, part of this process, Matt, part of this process... is that you've got to accept criticism from people that are going to rip into your choices. I mean,
I'm used to it.
Well, it doesn't sound like it. It sounds like you're
listeners.
Getting a little bit knocked.
it's been a lot on this week. And but anyway, I mean, I'm happy with my choices, and that's the main thing. We should get on to listener's choice, the final results, though, right?
Final results. What
so
game
we had,
is making our
we
list...
Had, yeah, we had obviously to vote between Horizon, PUBG, Prey, and Resident Evil. We had 371 votes in total, and in fourth place is Prey with just 11% of the votes. Shame. Third, in fact, joint second is both Resident Evil 7 and PUBG. So you had your chance to get PUBG in there, but no one chose it. The winner, of course, is Horizon Zero Dawn with 39% of the votes. I mean, that got the most suggestions as well. So clearly it's a listener's favorite, and Horizon Zero Dawn is this year's listener's choice.
Okay. First task of the day is to fit Horizon Zero Dawn on our list somewhere.
That's
here's our list.
It's very easy to do.
Well, here's our list. And here's how I'm going to do this. I've decided how we're going to do this, right? So in front of me, I've got Nex Machina, Night in the Woods, Rhyme, Super Mario Odyssey, Zelda Breath of the Wild, Nier Automata, how are we saying that, Sean?
Yeah, today? We've got to agree on that.
Automata?
I used to say Automata, and then everyone else said Automata.
Automata.
Fuck it.
Automata. Right, let's go with that. No. Destiny 2, Yakuza 0, Future Unfolding, Superhot VR, Persona 5, Million Onion Hotel, Wolfenstein 2, The New Colossus, What Remains of Edith Finch, Farpoint, and Life is Strange Before the Storm. So, I think what we should probably do is pick ones to... there are certain ones, Zelda and Mario, they're in, right? There's no way we're replacing them. They're in the hat. I would argue that Destiny 2 should probably be in the hat. Does anyone anyone against that?
No, agree.
Agree. Let me see. What else is an obvious one? Wolfenstein 2, I think, probably makes it, doesn't it?
Yeah, definitely.
And as does Farpoint.
Yeah.
As does Life
is... Agreed.
Life is Strange Before the Storm and Edith Finch, I think, should probably be in there.
Why Life is Strange? Is this just because it's one of yours, David?
No, I don't give a shit about that. Genuinely, I don't. I just think that that's probably a game that at least two of us are very passionate about.
Yeah, but it's also a game that hasn't ended yet.
All right, well, we could put that to one side. We'll put that in the maybe pile. Edith Finch, though, I think, should probably be in.
It should, but I still don't understand why we're doing this, when we could just easily just remove the one that Matt
because
did
I think
from last
we should,
year.
We should whittle it down. We should whittle it down.
This is a stitch-up, isn't it? I can feel it. This is a stitch-up somehow.
Just calm down.
Calm down. Maybe one of Sean's, James.
To prove it's not a stitch-up, I think Yakuza 0 should be in there, because James was very passionate about that game.
Mm-hmm.
I wouldn't like to see that go.
Show of hands, everyone, for Yakuza.
Same with Nier Automata. Ooh. I think should probably be in. There was a lot of buzz about that game. High review scores, etc. So, I mean, the ones that are sitting in front of us. Like, here's what I've got in front of me. Million Onion Hotel, Farpoint, Future Done. Unfolding, Super Hot VR, Persona 5... Nex Machina, Night in the Woods, Rhyme, Life is Strange Before the Storm.
Nex Machina's got to stay in, because reviews for that were through the roof, right? And yeah. I've not played it, and I know that is a fuck-up on my part.
Well, in that case, Persona 5's got to stay as well, because reviews for that were also through the roof, and everyone loved it.
Yeah, yeah, I mean, I know I definitely would hate it if I played it, okay. But you can't argue with...
We'll whack it in, there's three of us agreeing with that. Next one I'm looking at in front of me. Well, I still think Life is Strange Before the Storm should be ahead of, you know, the likes of Million Onion Hotel.
Yeah. I mean, Million Onion Hotel for me, that's your bottom, right?
Sorry, no, Sean. Mate, because we've talked about this and you don't know how to play it properly, Matt. So
it also came out this year, didn't it, Sean?
It did, which is a bonus.
Oh. Well, this is getting to the point,
is this
isn't it?
This is what we get for the whole fucking show.
This is getting to the point, isn't it? There's one game that really does stick out, and that's 2016 Super Hot VR. I mean, I don't want a game on this list that's going to bring the whole 2017 Game of the Year show into...
So Dave, where do you think, what should happen to games... that come out, say, at the end of December? Because one year...
That's irrelevant.
You definitely said...
At this point, that's irrelevant. We could have decided that before, but not at this stage.
Yeah, and you didn't even put that forward when you put it into the thing. I don't think you knew that it'd come out in 2016, Matt.
I mean, I just concentrated on the main platforms, such as Vive and PSVR. Like, it did come out on Oculus really back end of last year, and, I mean, a lot of...
Well, yeah, so that, by that argument... Like, I could have had Stardew Valley, but we all agreed that was out.
Yeah.
Well, so, I mean, I could have had Skyrim. You know, it came out on Switch. I've played it before.
Yeah,
you know, so.
Rocket League. Yeah. Rocket League.
Yeah, but even the first version of Super Hot VR came out after last year's Game of the Year shows. So what's going to happen to games that come out towards the end of the year?
Well, this is a question you should have asked fucking months ago, Matt.
Yeah.
Well, I forgot. It's
quite simple.
Dave. Even you said a couple of years ago, I wish I'd had like Rainbow Six Siege in my Game of the Year list.
Yeah, I do. I wish I had that, but I didn't because I knew it was against the rules at the time.
I think we would have agreed that if it came out after the Game of the Year show, it's allowed for the following year.
Let's see, Matt.
Well, no, we didn't. But I think we would have.
Matt, what one game would you replace on that list?
Probably Million Onion Hotel.
Million Onion Hotel. James, one game that you would replace on this list?
Super Hot VR.
Oh, no, James, think about it. Don't just say a game, because you're going to be like,
what
cool.
One game would you replace on this list?
I would replace Super Hot VR.
Oh, Sean, don't do this.
I would replace Super Hot VR.
Oh, yeah,
so...
fuck a lot of you.
Super Hot VR.
Like, one of my games of the year is... Stardew Valley, that's off for obvious reasons. This is now off. It's fucked it. I might as well not even bother with this episode this year. What's the fucking point?
Try playing some more games, Matt.
Played some games, James.
Super Hot
VR. Yeah, for 5 minutes
is
each.
Out.
And
hang on, it's definitely out already.
Yeah, I mean, there's three of us voted for it.
But we didn't vote for every single game.
It's all right, Matt. It's been replaced with another one of the games that you've played extensively this year, Horizon Zero Dawn.
Yeah, to be fair, yeah. So that
I never thought I'd play that extensively. I played it for a few hours.
Well,
that's, it, yeah. it, He just turned his HDR on and his thing, and then that was it. Like, you see, he was happy. I'm done with it now.
I just bought it to see the graphics. Oh, I'm fucked off. This is like ruining the episode for me already.
Matt, you submitted a 2016 game. How could you possibly have seen this any other way?
I'm annoyed at myself.
You did that on the same episode where you admitted to stealing cereal from my three-year-old child.
It's got nothing to do with it.
It's got everything to do with it.
It's got nothing to do with it, Dave. You know that. What's it got to do with, like, taking cereal from a baby? I mean, what's it got to do with responding to a listener tweet? It's got nothing to do with this.
Because you're always trying to bend the rules. Yeah, you're always trying to get away with stuff.
I'm trying to bend the rules.
I'll tell you what it's got to do with it, Matt. You've made an enemy, mate. And this tonight's going to be a rough night for you. It's going to be a rough night.
I mean, it's been a rough week, Dave. Like, why? Well, let's just carry on. Like, no,
yeah, okay, let's carry on. Yeah, let's do that. What? Sounds like a good idea.
This is going to be. It's not going to be good. It's not going to be good.
Okay, is everybody ready? I've just got two more to fold up and put in the hat.
Go on.
Fucking hell.
And we'll be drawing them out one by one. Sorry?
Is it the Mario hat you're using for this?
No, it's not actually. It's just a little, like, sort of. It's like a mixing bowl, but a plastic one. I don't know. It's rubbish, but it does a job. That's all that matters.
Dave, did you buy the mixing bowl this year or last year?
Ooh, that was weak.
Mixing bowl's on the list.
Fuck a lot of you.
Okay. So, again, if you didn't listen last year, during the first round, the person that submitted that game gets to talk about that game at length and say what they want to say about it and why it should be on this list. And then from then on, it's just voting. So if you're looking at looking at the time and we're 2 hours in and we ain't finished with the first 16, don't worry. It will get quicker. The first game out of the hat, ladies and gentlemen, is Million Onion Hotel.
Yeah.
And it's Sean.
Am I doing it before the other one's drawn?
Yeah, of course you are.
Oh, okay, cool. Million Onion Hotel is a game that you can get for your telephone. Costs a couple of quid. It's one of them telephone games. You just pay money for it and then you own it. This is nice. And on the surface of it, it's a game where there's like a grid on your screen and little onions appear. You tap the onion fucks off, you get some points, and it colours in the square that he was in. And then if you get like a line of them coloured in, you get some points and you get some bonus time. And then if you like manage to get it so that you get, say, two lines at the same time, you then go into space. And then other things start appearing on the board and you get more points and more bonus time. And then there are story bits where the story appears to be about an army general who seduces a woman who turns out to be an assassin who kills him. And then it turns out that he's got a circuit board connected to his heart that sets nukes flying when he dies. And then it starts World War III. And it's fucking amazing. I absolutely love it. It's just full of weird shit. But I do, like, I feel like it's trying to make, like, a sincere point about war at the same time, even though it's just absolutely idiotic. Like, there's more stuff that happens later on. There's, like, different characters that appear on the board, and you'll have different behaviours and stuff. And initially, you sort of play it, I don't know, I alluded to before, like Matt had started playing it and he was like, is this literally just whack-a-mole? And initially you are like a bit like, is this it? Really? Like, oh, sometimes I get a double match and that's cool, but, you know, I'm just sort of tapping on things. And but like, it's about like getting yourself to the point where you're regularly getting double matches and then moving on to like triple and quad ones. And it just becomes this really interesting, like fun, really fast-paced puzzle game with just all weird fucking characters and, like I say, these weird little cutscenes where all this stupid shit happens. And yeah, I think it's fucking amazing. Has anyone else played it other than Matt? Or
I played it this week.
Yeah,
I do not understand what it is or why it is.
Yeah,
and it feels a bit wacky.
It is,
Sean,
a bit.
Which
it's
I know
bit,
you hate.
It's a bit zany.
So, it's like, totally what is the wacky deal, right? Because it does feel like I'm missing something at the moment. At the moment, I'm literally just playing the game.
Yeah.
By, you know, I understand that there's a certain one of the things I like about it is that there's obviously the mechanic of the best way to earn points and bonuses is by lining up two lines and then polishing them both off at the same time.
Yeah.
The problem I have with that, right? I like the fact that although I know I should be doing that, there's because of the nature of the game, you're so insanely tempted to just hit every onion on the screen anyway.
Yeah.
Actively fuck yourself up constantly, right?
Yeah.
And I quite like that. What I don't get is that it feels that a lot of the tactics and stuff that are obviously behind this don't really work, because a lot of it is just, oh, I hope this one comes up soon, rather than you
there is an element of that, like,
sticking it.
Yeah, like there are times where you are just sometimes just sitting there waiting for the right one to come up. And again, it's about exercising that restraint and being like, no, don't just hit everything for the sake of it. But I don't know. I quite enjoy the fact that it's part skill and it is part just stop yourself from just hold that urge back to just hit all the onions.
The only other issue I have with it is that with games like this, you want to you don't want them to last an insanely long amount of time, and I'm finding the games are lasting really, really long, especially with all the cutscenes whacked in and all that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
I don't know, man. I like, it's way, way too early for me to call it. Way too early. So I'm not saying that I don't like it, because I haven't, I clearly haven't played enough of it.
Yeah.
But there is part of me going, what is the appeal here? Because I've seen the cutscenes and stuff, and none of them really made me, I didn't get anything out of them as such.
Oh, okay. I got a lot of the cutscenes.
Did you?
I thought it interesting, and the cutscenes, I must have seen five or six or maybe seven. They elevated what initially felt like a quite simplistic game. We just hammered the screen, basically. I knew there must be some strategy to tap in a certain order and saving lines so you get bonuses and whatnot. But I must have played for about, a fair few journeys to and from work. And I must have only had two end games, because it was just, it just kept going, and I don't know. Maybe I wanted the games to be shorter. But have you seen an ending of the campaign? Is there a campaign? I mean,
the game does end. It has an end, and then once you get there, you unlock. Yeah, there's an ending sequence, and it is deeply unpleasant. and I think basically there is I think there's a secret proper ending, but you have to unlock all those little story cards in order to get it. I mean, some of them you're just I'll probably just get that through attrition just by sort of having to go occasionally. But then there are some where it's finish a game with 3.5 million points. I've only ever managed 2.5 million. So it's that's quite a gap for me to close. So I don't know if I'm going to do it, but I'm keen to continue trying.
Here's a question, Sean. You know the first boss battle in that game?
Yeah.
Is there a way of stopping him just jumping down on things and then it costing you seconds? Because
The trick with the bosses is, as well as learning their patterns, they get a shield when you can't hurt them and stuff. But also, so when you get a double match and you go into space, that starts generating onion knights. And if you get all those, if you get plenty of those on the go before the boss battle, they're all lined up and ready to go, and they do way more damage to the boss.
I knew that.
Yeah.
What I didn't know is that he goes, flies off screen, then jumps back in.
Yeah.
And then it costs you a ridiculous amount of seconds.
Yeah, basically, once you get good enough at getting your double matches and getting loads of knights together, the bosses can usually be done almost instantly.
Really quickly. Okay, gotcha.
Yeah. Obviously, I have got no illusions that this is going to be our game of the year. I enjoyed it a lot and found it really interesting and quite refreshing and weird, and just felt it was worth talking about.
But what's it up against, Sean? What is it up against?
I hope it's Zelda.
It's Life is Strange Before the Storm. This is my one. It's a hard one to defend because it's not fully out yet. So I guess this is kind of limited to episode 1 and episode 2 of Life is Strange Before the Storm. I was very confused about what Life is Strange was after the first season had ended. I think we spoke about a second series and what that should be. And then they announced two second series. One seemed like a dodgy sort of spin-off, which was actually a prequel to the first series, and the other one seemed like the proper project. We all said we wouldn't want to see the characters again. It felt like it ended well, and it felt like that story was complete. We didn't need to go and retread over things. And I was interested when they announced it was a prequel to see what was going on with Rachel and Chloe. I thought that was an interesting angle to take. And I thought, you know, there was a lot of people saying, well, we don't need to see that story. And I was like, well, we kind of can. I mean, I know we don't have to. I felt series one was complete and it felt fantastic. And I had a good feeling for the characters by the end of it. But there was a lot between that relationship that was really unexplained. It didn't really show what Chloe's life was like before Max turned up. So I was interested. I was always going to buy it because I love that universe and I love the characters. And although it is a little bit, you know, teen high school film, it still has moments of emotion that sort of float to the surface and grab you. So I started Life is Strange Before the Storm, and I adored the first episode. I thought it was really interesting without doing anything explosive. And it couldn't really do anything explosive. It couldn't threaten the world around Chloe because we saw it, her world, you know, slightly after this was set. So we know that, you know, that this thing had happened and Rachel had gone missing. However, we also knew that her parents weren't going to die or run off or, you know, it was very limited to what they can do. And it would have been easy to sort of force some drama into things. And there's drama in there, but what I love about Life is Strange Before the Storm is how sedated it is and how its main focus throughout the first two episodes is the relationship between Chloe and Rachel. And it nails it. It absolutely nails it. And as I've said quite a few times on this show, episode two should be a game that is pointed at and laughed at by the majority of the internet, because some of the set pieces and some of the places that game goes, it, to be quite frank, is written on paper, is fucking cringy, like really cringy. And you think, oh my God, they're not doing this, are they? But they do. And somehow the writing and the characters are so good and so perfectly pitched. The tone of it is so perfect that I was absolutely blown away. And I spoke about it briefly, and we're not going to spoil stuff on this podcast. There will be areas where we do have to go into later game stuff, possibly story stuff. So if you totally don't want to hear spoilers, then, you know, back away. But there are some things we need to say to express our point, and one of those things is that there's a play scene in episode two. It's like a school production. And what it does with that, I mean, as I started playing it, James, you know you've seen this. Mm-hmm. As I started playing this, my toes curled and I thought, they're not doing this. We've seen this in a million things. It's why are they doing this? What could we possibly get out of this? But my word, it fucks with you in so many ways that I almost come out in tears. Like, I had a genuine lump in my throat during that bit. It was wonderful. And it is full of, this game is full of stuff like that. It's full of risks that it nails. And I had no idea this game was going to be this good. No idea. I thought this was going to be a generic, you know, play on the whole, hey, you liked, like an Amazon advert. You like this? Well, why not try this? And you're like, nah, this ain't good. But this was, I'll put it this way, if the third episode is as good as the first and second, then this beats the first series of Life is Strange. And that is...
Wow,
that
really?
Never thought I'd say it. But yeah, in my opinion, it beats it. James, you're the only one, the other person that played this, right?
Yeah. I mean, I'm beginning to agree with you actually with that, because you're right. There are so many points in this game so far where it could have just failed, like, and been awful, but it's just so well executed. Like every part that you just feel, you know, sort of head in your hands, it's like, it's actually fantastic. And yeah, I mean, I didn't really feel anything negative at all about it. I mean, especially compared with Life is Strange, like when that first came out, the first couple of episodes of that were a bit dodgy, weren't they? if we're honest. You know, the with the dialogue and everything.
Episode one, surely.
Yeah,
there was something there, but it was, it felt, I don't know, the writing was a bit shit, and the story wasn't. Yeah, it didn't start strongly, put it that way.
But this, I mean, this hits the ground like straight away, and it feels, it just feels a bit more mature, really, I thought. Yeah, a bit more sort of confident, really. But yeah, absolutely
well,
fantastic.
Yeah, it's more confident in not going crazy. Like, yeah. It doesn't need the subplot of this big disaster hitting the city. It mm-hmm. doesn't need to make you feel like you're in peril. It's just a beautiful relationship coming to bear. Like, Chloe is a character that some people dislike because she's overly cocky and she's overly, you know, sort of, hey, dude, no, shove it up your bum, man. You know, that, like, she's Bart Simpson in places.
Yeah, she's a bit cringy in that regard.
Don't have a cow. This game starts like that. It starts where Chloe is a complete, like, it starts with you trying to get into a rock concert and you're giving, you know, quick, smart-ass comebacks to the bouncer to try and get
in. Yeah, that's the scene I played, and it's a bit like, and like, Jill was sat on the couch behind me, like, watching it, and she's like, it's just, yeah, that bit is a bit embarrassing.
I was rolling my eyes, and I thought, fuck, is this where this game's going? Are we going to see crazy? The more you watch, the more you see Chloe's insecurities and her teenage mind working at a million miles an hour, her relationship with her mum. And as I've said before, you know, Max was a blank canvas and you could project your personality onto her. I think this is morally correct. And I think this is what she should do. With before the storm, I was completely role playing. You know, there's a bit where you can make up with David or just give a little hope to David that you're not a complete arsehole. And I didn't take it because I thought, this is Chloe. She's a teenager. She's fucked off. I'm playing her. She's pissed off. She hates David. And that's going to be drummed home. You know what I mean? Mm. And the way it deals with all of that stuff, the heartache I felt when I was treating my mum like shit, it really, really affected me. I thought it was so well done. Without adding ridiculous shit in there. Even the moral choices, they flip-flop so much, you know, and they give you multiple chances to change your path without using the rewind mechanic. It's brilliant. Like, it's brilliant. I'm so excited for this final episode, and I know it's a bit of a cop-out. The full game's not here, and the third episode may be shit, but I think the first two episodes do more than enough to justify it being on this list. So that's why it's on it. So now we got... has anyone got anything else to say about either of these games, or should we get to voting?
No. Let's just get it over with, shall we?
Let's go vote.
Sean, what are you voting for?
I vote for the superior game, Million Onion Hotel.
I vote for the superior game, Life is Strange Before the Storm.
What?
Matt?
I also vote for a superior game, Life is Strange Before the Storm.
James?
I haven't played the Million Onion Hotel, and I'm sure it's very good, but sorry, I'm going to have to vote for Life is Strange as well.
Well, yeah, I am shocked.
I gave it a go. At least I played it in a week. I mean, you do that.
I also feel a little bit bad because it does feel like I'm missing something, Sean, and I'm sure, you know, it's the sort of game that I would get into, but...
Yeah.
That's the way the cookie crumbles, mate.
Right. Fucking... Yeah,
next one out at a hat. Here we go. I don't know if you can even hear this. I should bring it up to the microphone. We have Night in the Woods. Matt Murray, you nominated this. Why should it be on the list?
Night in the Woods. It is part. It's like it's a 2D side-scrolling adventure game, which has the feeling of like an indie movie, like Garden State, for instance. It tells the story of this cat called May, who has returned back to her hometown after dropping out of college. And there's this mystery about something that happens in the woods. She meets up. It's very much like 90s inspired. She meets up with her mates, or her old mates. She sees people in the town that she used to see, and they're like, "Oh, how's it going, May?" You know, and they are obviously you're one, the impression that she's doing really well at college, but she, you know, and she just, to some people, she says that she tells them the truth. To most others, she just says, no, she's back home for a bit. You know, she's a bit embarrassed about the truth, really. Yeah, she meets up with her friends, and they try to recapture the youth. They go to visit like the mall or some places they used to go when they were younger to try and, you know, get that sort of that old feeling back. And it's a really, really, really well written game. The dialogue feels really natural. It's witty. It's, there's some sort of, how would you describe it? But basically there is, in inverted commas, witty banter between all the characters. Like the way they're written, they really feel like they are old friends. The feelings of May going back to her old hometown, seeing her parents, sort of being a bit sort of bitter that she has to come back, but also excited and a bit nostalgic that she's back, trying to see old places. She goes to the mall, as I said, and then that what was once a really amazing place to be when you're a younger kid hanging out on the mall with your friends on the weekends, now that's just full of dollar shops and basically crap stuff basically, and she has to come to terms with the fact that this place that she thought was once brilliant, now she's back there in sort of the cold light of day, it's no longer the case. Like I said, there's loads of humor in the writing. It feels very current, even though this is, I'm not sure what era this is set at, but it feels like it's set in the 90s, but I'm not sure if that's ever actually, like, talked about. But, I think it's a really, really fantastic game. I think the story actually, although when I first started it, I thought, okay, this is going to be an incredibly, like, really strong narrative experience. Actually, I found that it's less about that and more about just the characters being in this environment rather than this story that isn't really actually driving the gameplay. What's driving the gameplay is the interactions between the characters, how May interacts with the world around her, her thoughts and feelings about being back home. I think it looks great. And yeah, a soundtrack, I can't remember the name of the band, but there's this, it's called, I think it's Holoka. I'm not sure if it's one of the writers or someone, who worked on the game, but that person's band, it's got really great music. It feels very much like Garden State sort of soundtrack, which I loved. It's got a lot of similar things to that, actually. And that also Garden State with Natalie Portman in, she also, you know, that's also a film about returning back to your hometown. So I think it's got a lot of similarities to that. And as someone myself who moved out of their hometown, many, many years ago and has to go back every now and then, it spoke to me loads in that regard. And, you know, if any of us or anyone listening has moved out from where they grew up and then, you know, to go elsewhere and then had to go back for, you know, Christmas, I guess is quite an apt time of year, but birthdays or funerals or whatever you have to go back home for, you all have the similar sort of feelings. And I think anyone who has done that, you should definitely play this game. I think it'll really speak to you. And it really spoke to me. Yeah, I think Night Woods is fantastic. And also, no one's really talking about it. This started as a Kickstarter. So already some people probably think, oh, you know, I can't balk it's Kickstarter. But this feels super overlooked. And it's a shame because I think it's great. And that's Night in the Woods.
So they go to the mall, do they?
They go to many places.
Sorry, I don't think you mentioned
it.
Right, okay.
The shopping precinct. Thank you.
Yeah. Do you remember going to the mall when you were a kid? No, Matt, no, I don't. I remember the kids from Bayside doing that. I remember personally being involved in that.
Okay. They went to Lakeside in this game.
I remember going to the Arndale Centre after they
Lakeside,
put it back together.
Are you having a fucking laugh? I have a proper working class family. We weren't allowed in Lakeside because we were begging.
Have you seen right. Lakeside recently? It's a right dump.
Yeah, well, I mean, I've been for a billion of years. But
careful, James, giving away where you live there, mate.
It's up against for quite a long time, Sean.
It's up against Persona 5.
Oh,
James.
Okay.
Why is this on the list?
Okay, so the thing is I know this is going to be a tough sell because I know that this is not really particularly the kind of games that any of you would probably play. Although, I don't know, I want to make a pitch for it because I do believe that it's probably the best JRPG that I've ever played. So, Persona 4 may have marginally better characters, but in so many other aspects, 5 is absolutely better. I played 4 before this, but I still feel that there's I don't know. I think this is a fantastic place for anyone who wants to start with the series, because they refine everything so perfectly with this. As with Yakuza 0, it's just all the irritating aspects of JRPG like game design are mostly absent from this game, and that's why one of the main reasons I love it. It's got a fantastic array of characters that I genuinely cared about, not just at the end, but from the start, because they're generally really well written. I mean, I sunk probably about, I don't know, 80-90 plus hours into this game. It's it took over my life for like a brief period of time, and it's also just one of the most stylish games I've ever played, and it's got just the best soundtrack. I mean, I know, Sean, you know, obviously you think Nier Automata had like a better one, but this is still, I'm not going to argue because I've not played it, but this is still fantastic. It's just so stylish. I mean, I listen to it even when I'm not playing the game. It's just it's really, really amazing. You see, the thing is it's so well placed, and you see, I like stories in games, and I really like the aesthetic of JRPGs like this, but I don't generally like the repetitive gameplay that you usually find in JRPGs, and this is such a good refinement that these concerns just don't exist with Persona 5. It's a JRPG that I'd recommend to people who don't like JRPGs. It's just such a complete and well-made experience. It's just amazing. It's one of the best games of the year, I think.
Night in the Woods versus Persona 5. Voting begins. Let's start with Matt. Who are you voting for?
I'm going to go Night in the Woods.
James?
Well, I'm going to go for Persona 5, obviously.
Sean?
It's got to be Night in the Woods. Sorry. I understand what you're saying, James, about, because you know what I'm like with JRPGs. But I tried Persona 4 and did not get on with it at all.
Which is why you would like this better, I think. But
yeah, maybe. But I've never going to have the time to find out now. That's the thing. Not for a long time anyway. Whereas Night in the Woods, that's like still like, that's on the list of like, I could probably knock that out over
Christmas. Yeah, I know
you
love it, Sean.
Yeah.
Well, I know, but I mean, Night in the Woods is quite long. It's still about 10 hours long.
Is it?
Yeah. Well, yeah, it's 10 to 15 or so.
Yeah, but it's not
like 40 hours long, is it? Like,
no, it's 90 hours, James. You can't really...
Right, okay. It's because I quite like being in this position. I've got the fate of James and Matt in my hands.
Can I just ask a couple of questions first? Because I'm just curious.
No, I want to say something. Okay. I've not played either of these games. My vote is like totally viable. I want to know why I should be voting for your game. Should we start with Matt? Matt, why should I be voting for your game?
Because I think, as people of a certain age, I think Night in the Woods really, really speaks to people of our age group. I think it's just a really, really super well-written game that I think it's really, really charming, full of humour, full of bite. I think it's worthy of anyone's time. It only takes 10 to 15 hours, so it's easily playable without needing like 90 hours to enjoy the game. And I think you'll love it, Dave, honestly.
I mean, if I were you, I would have said, well, I'll definitely vote for Future Unfolding, but okay, fine, that's an interesting choice to take. James, why should I vote for your game and not Matt Murray's?
Well, okay, cause, I mean, the thing is, right, is you like Catherine, didn't you, Dave?
I did like Catherine, yeah.
Yeah, you see, I think if you like Catherine, you'd like this, because there's something, there's a lot of similarities, especially in sort of like character design and also like the way the plot, like, you know, sort of works out. But can I just ask Matt a few questions? Is that all right about his game?
If it's going to help your argument, oh, sure. Go for it.
So Matt, this is a narrative game that you've got here, yeah? How, I mean, did you feel it ended well, the game?
The ending's not super strong. It's a bit confusing.
Could you like outline some of like, you know, how you felt the game ended, you know, considering how the game
went? Well, I'm certainly not going to spoil the game because it's very much like a narrative experience. But this Mystery in the Woods it goes quite. Shall I spoil it? I don't know. I mean,
going beyond the early sections that you've already talked about, you know, how does it develop?
Have I mentioned the mall?
You did, yeah.
No, okay. So, I mean, at the end of each sort of level, or section, you go into the woods and basically complete your sort of platforming bits, and those eventually turn to sort of boss areas. The actual story, although when it does get to its climax, it's a bit ambiguous. It's not really clear what you're supposed to take out of it. And see, but
I'd imagine it probably wasn't that clear because you haven't finished it, Matt, have you?
Well, I mean, okay, I haven't finished the game.
So this is a narrative heavy game that really touched you. It was potentially one of your games in the year. You didn't finish it.
That you said then it was a bit confusing because you haven't experienced it.
You wanted to spoil the ending. Go on, Matt.
Matt, you've played it. You see, it also it doesn't take 10, 15 hours to finish.
Matt, did you watch the ending on YouTube?
How long to be?
It's probably around sort of 8 to 9 hours, but you've played it for 4.7 hours, Matt, which is quite a lot less than the stated amount of time.
Yeah, so I had a bit of an issue with this. So I had it installed on my work laptop, and I had to reinstall our work laptop. And last week, I thought, okay, I need to finish this game because I've put it in my game of the year list. So it's probably quite imperative that I finish the game. When I went to try this last week, in fact, when I was away, when I reinstalled it, there was no cloud save, even though I'd got like 4 and a bit hours into the game. So I thought, well, that's annoying because I really
Matt,
want to finish it.
You said
it,
that
so.
The ending was confusing and it goes crazy.
That's what I've watched on YouTube.
You've watched the ending on YouTube? I can't believe that. Okay, this is ridiculous.
I had to read. James, shut up. I had to read some stuff about the game, obviously. I had to read about the ending. I had to read what it's about, and it sounds really confusing.
I can't believe this. I put in 80 plus hours in a game, like, you know, and to talk about it, and Matt can't even be bothered to finish the game that he's nominated. It's like,
I still think it's worth it. Are you saying it's an issue because the game isn't finished?
I'm saying it's an issue that you can't talk authoritatively about how this is a fantastic narrative experience when you haven't experienced the narrative.
I have for 4.7 hours.
Oh, no.
Less than half the game, Matt, you've played. It's probably about a third. That's absurd.
James is fighting fucking dirty, man, and I'm worried about what he's done.
Are you saying that I can't talk about it with authority because I haven't put millions of hours into it or because I haven't finished the story?
It'd be like reading, I don't know, let's say like a third of The Lord of the Rings, like reading a third of The Fellowship of the Ring and then just saying like it's amazing or whatever, and then not saying that you've read the rest of it.
Because you can say you enjoy what you play of it or what you read of it in that
case. Okay, let's look at it a different way then. Okay, if we look at the original...
James, we have just voted through Life is Strange.
I was going to say, I mean, Life is Strange isn't...
No, you weren't going to say, throwing your bone in, Matt.
But they were two still, like, completed experiences that we've played so far. Because we couldn't play anymore because it's not out yet. Matt couldn't play anymore because he couldn't be bothered to play it.
That's true. Well,
no, because the cloud save didn't upload. Steam screwed me. I still think you can get enjoyment out of it. I still think all those things I said are true. And it still spoke to me. I may not finish the game.
This is getting brutal. Matt, James, I'm going to have to vote James, for Persona 5. Right. Like, based on that argument, man, I can't
hang on. Dave, right, if you vote for Night in the Woods, I will vote for Breath of the Wild. That's all I'm saying. If you need a hand with that, I'm your man. What about Future Unfolding, Dave? I like that.
Future Unfolding anyway. I mean, you were into it as much as I was, so don't give me any of that.
Maybe I won't. Don't know.
Well, maybe you don't, but so, Matt...
Just threatening him.
Yeah,
oh, shit.
I know.
I'm so bad at this.
This is getting bad.
Okay, fine. I mean, I've
James,
already had...
James, how much research have you done in preparation for tonight?
I've done a bit.
Oh god. Has he realised I've only played half an hour of Breath of the Wild? Has he realised I've got 6 moons in Mario?
Oh god, we've created a monster.
I was going to pick Matt up on something earlier on, but I thought I'd save it for later. So, you know, it's fine. Go on.
Okay. Alright, well, I'm going to have to vote for Persona 5 based on that, so it's 2 each. So it's whether that argument has swayed Sean.
I don't think...
It's purely on a matter of principle. Then, yeah, I think I'm going to change my vote.
Oh, come on, Sean. Is this just like this? Is this a fuck Matt year?
No, it's a Matt fucked up year. Is what it is.
Matt, I'm not being funny, but your first game went out because it didn't even come out in 2017. Your second game's come out because you were talking about the ending until it got pointed out that you haven't completed it.
I was hoping that wouldn't come out.
Obviously. But James has got his gloves on this year. I don't know what's
Detective Columbo over there.
So, are you going to appeal that decision? But if I were you, I wouldn't, because I can't see it ending well.
Let's move on to the next one.
Persona 5 into the next round.
Yes.
Yes. Ouch. What were you saying before we started recording? I'm not sure it's going to be as good as last year. Right, okay, the next game on the list is... Oh, it's a big one. Super Mario Odyssey James. Only on Nintendo Switch.
Okay, I've got a bit of a monologue for this, but I don't know, hopefully you enjoy it. Okay, so anyway, here we go. Picture the scene. It's the 7th...
Oh, fuck off, James. Vote for the other game.
It's the 7th of November, 1998. A younger, slightly less cynical James is about to celebrate his 18th birthday. For months, he has been saving the money he earned in his rubbish job working the evening shifts at the co-op. His intention to buy a PlayStation. However, at the last minute, swayed by reading reviews from N64 magazine and memories
and
the of
the... extra cash from his mum and dad.
And memories of the Super NES, he instead buys the Mario 64 Nintendo 64 pack. So anyway,
and all the accessories and games currently available for the console.
Did not do that. But anyway, so anyway, I spent months and months playing Mario after that, trying to find every single secret and finished it multiple times. And yeah, the game was magic. And it's not really since Super Mario Odyssey have I had the same feeling as I did when I played Mario 64. I mean, no game this year has made me have the same feelings of joy as Mario Odyssey. And this is somebody who I don't have much of a heart, to be honest, with these things at all. I'm a pretty awful person with all this stuff. But this game really, like, touched me. I really, really loved it. It's a game, it just gives so much. And the more that you play it, you get more from it. And it's just so clear that the game has been put together by people who love Mario as much as all of us that, like, play the game. And the real ending in particular, I mean, we talked about this, Dave, like, it's real evidence of that, of just the amount of craftsmanship that's gone into this, but also how much they, you know, it's sort of...
They adore Mario.
Yeah, and there's like a sort of, you know, there's a thing between the player and the developers with that. And also...
James, are you getting choked up?
No, I'm not. And
No, can I ask you straight, are you getting a little bit choked up? Because when you nominated it last week... Mm. You sounded like you were getting a bit choked up. Are you genuinely getting a bit... And be honest, like, how are you going to take the piss out of you? I promise, you got a pass.
No, not really. I mean, it's just... See, it's like, there's so many things with this. Like, there's the accessibility stuff that has meant that my kids have, like, been much more engaged with this than any other, like, Mario game so far. I mean, I came back home the other day from work, and I went into, like, you know, like, the back room, and they were sitting at the table, like, with the Switch, like, with each of them, you know, like, they had, like, it in, like, tabletop mode, and they were just sitting there playing it and just, like, chatting with each other and, like, helping each other out. And I just thought, that's amazing. It's just so nice to see that, like, to see them, like, you know, like, playing together like that. And it's just, I mean, the thing was, and this is what's so great about it, is it's accessible, but then... The game structure, initially it seems really simplistic, but then the more you play it, the more it opens up and it keeps on just giving more. And yeah, it's just amazing. It's it's up there with Mario 64, which I love.
I mean, we no one's going to argue against that. I assume we haven't really heard Sean talk about it. But for me personally, I played through the campaign thinking this is an okay game. I still preferred 3D World because I was a huge fan of that game on the Wii U. And then it opened up. And I had a similar experience. Like, the first time Harry played it, watching him struggle to do anything in that game. And when he played 3D World, all he did was chuck Luigi. And it was a while back, so I'm not saying comparing the two games in terms of, like, accessibility. But I watched him jump repeatedly off the ledge, and that was it. That's as far as he got with that. Which is, but actually, funny, a bit of a sidetrack here. I really, really hope 3D World comes out for the Switch, because I will definitely buy it.
Yeah,
I'd love to see how he gets on with it now. But anyway, that's by the by. Then I had a personal moment of clarity with that game after completing it. I started to enjoy it more and more. The more I played, the more I enjoyed. I got to 500 moons, and that was the moment where I said, this is a clear-cut 10 out of 10. This is the best Mario game for years. Like, that's where it topped 3D World for me, because that last scene genuinely almost brought me to tears. And watching my son fall in love with it, the way that he has done. I mean, everything is Mario. His birthday's in February, and he's and this is bullshit, because it's kind of like a personal experience that's not actually about the game itself. It's about the reaction of the game to my child, and that's, you know, he could have had that over anything. He has it over Hot Wheels as well. You know, he's obsessed with Hot Wheels. And I'm not nominating that for Game of the Year 2017. They come out last year for stars. And it's the more I play, and I'm still playing pretty much every day, the more I play, the more I love. And I'm genuinely heartbroken that there's a finite amount of moons. I'm genuinely heartbroken that there's a limited amount of content in it. Now, don't get me wrong, it's going to take me hours and hours to get through. But every time I go to a world and I see there's less moons to collect, I am really, honestly, truly gutted. And I am praying to Nintendo that they either expand on it or release a Mario Odyssey 2, because I think the system's insane. The way Mario controls is insane. The amount of content in there is just breathtaking. The stuff that it lets you do that you've never done in a Mario game before is absolutely wonderful. I think this might be a controversial point, because I know not everyone loves it. I think New Donk City is one of the best locations ever in a Mario game. I think it's perfect. It's so much fun to jump about that city. And whether you don't like the humans or not is up to you. I like the way they approach them as if they're characters in the game, rather, you know, like weird alien, like all the other weird
really
alien
like humans now. Yeah. I think they were great. And the music in that level was just incredible.
You know, one thing that is not mentioned, it's in my brain, and I said this to James the other day. There's a moon in New Donk City where you see a man standing on the edge of a building saying that he's depressed and he wants cheering up. And you have to go and change into a clown outfit and go and cheer him up, and he gives you a moon, right? That was like a proper... It sounds stupid, because the character's in the game, and maybe it wasn't even intentional. But seeing him stand at the edge of the building like that and then say how sad he was, I was like, whoa, there's a real life issue here out of nowhere. There's no other real life issues addressed in this game. That, like, fucking, it was like a slap in the face, and I was kind of like, whoa, right, I'm getting changed now. Let me put my clown makeup on.
That happens again as well, though, in New York City, because there's that other guy who's depressed, who's like, who just wants you to sit next to him, like on the bench.
Oh yeah, God, yeah.
And then he just,
that was real sort of, I think that was like a social commentary on New York. It was like, no one talks to me. I just want someone to come and sit down next to me on the bench. And then every time you pass him, he thanks you. Like, it's I love Super Mario Odyssey. I went from thinking this is a 7 or 8 out of 10 to thinking I cannot believe how good this is. And it's one of the best Mario games ever made. Sean, so you weren't on the show when it came out.
No.
You weren't part of the discussions.
No.
You didn't really talk about it last week, did you?
No, I didn't. So
what was your take on it? How far into it are you?
I can't remember. So I've done the first ending, and then sort of did like a proper sort of deep dive into a couple of my favourite worlds, but I don't think I'm anywhere near 500 moons yet.
Oh, shit, man.
No. And I'm,
you
and
might
I'm
cry.
Listening to you guys, and yeah, like I've not felt that love for it. Like, clearly it's brilliant, and I'm not trying to be like, it's not that good, fuck off. Like, clearly it's incredible. Like, the sheer fucking density of the worlds in it is incredible. Like, you know you play through them and you're like, I know there's going to be secrets, but I feel like I've basically seen all of it. And then you do a couple of secrets as well, maybe, that, you know, because it's really, as that classic, you know, Nintendo thing, have been really good at subtly signposting where hidden things are. And then, yeah, and then you get the first ending and it's like, okay, I've got about 10% of the moons.
Yeah.
And there's just so much just buried in there, which is an unbelievable achievement. But this is it.
And I totally understand what you're saying, right? Mm. And I was saying the same stuff that you're saying now at that stage in the game.
Yeah.
And there was still that feeling in the back of my mind that feels like I'm not part of the mass hysteria about it, right? So I remember sitting there playing it at that stage and saying, I'm still enjoying it, and these little new levels that it's introduced are interesting, but I am still not waving my hands around saying this is one of the best Marios ever.
Yeah.
Like, I wasn't having that feeling. The only advice I can give to you, Sean, is to keep playing.
Crack on.
Because
yeah.
the game gets... Like, one of the main complaints that people were saying when they first run through the game was, it's a little bit, like, not annoying, but a bit disappointing that it's like, here's a moon, here's a moon, here's a moon, here's a moon.
Mm.
Right? Obviously, the more moons you get, the less that happens. And you really have to look into what the game is wanting you to do to start 100%ing things, finding all the moons, finding tricky moons and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And the game gives you enough tools to sort of hint at where you should be going, so you never get frustrated. I've not had to look at guides and stuff like that. I think I look at guides for one moon. And that's incredible considering I'm nearly at 700. I think I'm over 700 now. But a large portion of those is Harry buying them from the shop these days. And it gets to a point, especially after the 500 moons thing, because after 500 moons, then you're at the point where you're going, okay, now which kingdoms do I go to try and, you know, polish up? I know James goes through them one by one, 100% of them, but I haven't got that in me. I like to zip about all over the place and try things, get a few moons here, get a few moons there. That's when the game goes from good to genius in my eyes, and it's bittersweet because I want to play more, but the more I play, the closer I'm getting to that 999 limit. And I know when I get there, I am going to be so bummed out. I'm going to be so bummed out until they announce either a sequel or an add-on. Matt, you've been through the same process as well, haven't you? You weren't really into it until recently.
When I played through the campaign and to get to the first ending, I thought, you know, this is clearly a work of absolute genius. It was an amazing game, but it was so easy. There was absolutely no challenge. I was very quickly just getting through the worlds, and I thought, this is, you know, clearly an amazing game, but it hasn't really got its emotional hooks or any sort of hooks into me, really. It's fun to play, but there's nothing more than that. And then that challenge that I was desperate for came in droves once I finished the game, and then, you know, there were many, many more moons in each level to go back and find. And then I've gone back and I've got 500 moons now, so I'm just doing the other ending.
Have you started that level?
Yeah, I have, yeah. I said to you on the weekend.
Yeah, we got that message, didn't we?
So I'm about halfway through.
How are you getting
on
with it?
I'm about halfway through now.
Really?
And, yeah, I think I said, because I got my 500th moon, it's just like the snow level after New Donk, so I've still got actually loads of the games to go back to, but that's when I hit my 500. Oh, no, it's on the beach one, I think, or whatever. So I got that, and when I first started, I was like, I'm not sure I can be fucked with this, but I've gone back to it, you know, loads of times over the weekend, yeah, I think I've got to about halfway.
Have you done the waves yet?
You've not
done the metal waves?
No, I've...
You are nowhere near halfway.
No, sorry, the metal waves and lava, I've done that, yeah.
Yeah, oh God, that is the most genius thing.
Oh yeah.
Like, when you work out what it's actually asking you to do.
Yeah, it's brilliant.
The first time I did it, I was like, oh my God, this went from, this is impossible, I'm never going to do this, to, this is so easy, I just needed to know how.
And it's like, and that, even it's like that with every element of that stage,
yeah,
isn't it?
Pretty
like,
much.
It's just learning each bit, and then once you do it, all comes together.
Exactly, yeah, because the first bit was never hard, but after that, it's like, hey, well, there's poles and stuff, and I'm like, how do I even do this? How do I even get to the top of that bit? And then I did that, and now I can get to the flower bridge, but I keep dying around there. But yeah, it's so good. It's so good. And I mean, I haven't finished our 500 moons one, but even just going back and doing the extra moons after you finish again first time round, that is the Mario game I wanted. There's challenge. It's really hard. Almost every single moon is that there's an element of genius in it. I mean, like I said to you last week on the show, I text you guys to say, "Oh, Mario, man." And you're like, "Well, what have you done? What have you done?" But I hadn't done anything. I just got another moon. And going back to levels like New Donk, which when I went through the game first time, I basically got the minimum amount of moons that was required before I can move on. So I didn't redo, I hardly done anything really. So New Donk, I'd only done, you know, the basic 10 or 20, however moons you need, and moved on. But going back to it now, and now I've got as many moons as I can without like really spending time in it, because I wanted to get to the 500. But New Donk's just amazing. I even like the humans. I just think they're really great in it. And that, yeah, there are just so many moments of genius in this game. It's unbelievable. And like some parts of this game could be games in their own right. Like the tank bit, like where sort of the tank shooting mini game. I love it when it goes into 2D. The 2D stuff is incredible.
Really, really is incredible. And the stuff that it does with the 2D stuff after you complete it is fucking beyond genius. Like, how did they even think some of that stuff up? It's really, really clever.
Yeah, it's just, there are so many incredible moments and things and genius moons. It's just, yeah, it's nonstop. I'm still obviously playing. I'm going to get first 500 moons thing. And yeah, I don't see myself stopping. Maybe when I need to use guides to get missing moons, maybe I'll start to slow down. And I had hoped to get the 500 moon ending done before, this podcast, but I haven't. But yeah, it's amazing.
So what's it up against? Zelda, Breath of the Wild. God, imagine that.
I bet it's one of mine.
Maybe one of mine, Sean, because might as well be out in the first round.
Oh my God, I actually don't like this.
Go on.
What is it?
What Remains of Edith Finch.
Oh no!
Finch.
Oh no!
I think we all wanted Edith Finch to go a little bit further. I genuinely did. And, you know, I said not too long ago...
Maybe it will. You know, it's...
I said not too long ago that I had problems with the way it ended, but it still bums me out that it's up against Super Mario. Sean, your game, your shout.
So I was incredibly late to this, despite it clearly being one of those games that I like. Just never got around to it at the time, and then played it a couple of months back. It is a walking simulator. Where you play as a woman called Edith Finch, who's basically going back to her old family house to basically get some answers about this supposed family curse that hangs over them, where basically only one child from each generation survives more than, like, basically they all sort of die in their 20s or 30s. And it's just unbelievably smart in the way, like, it's one of those, you know, quote unquote walking simulators that feels really well paced, and it reminds me, you know, like when we've talked about everybody's gone to the rapture, even and I sort of defend the sort of long walking bits, and then it's like you play something like this and it's like, actually, yeah, there's better ways of doing it. You can still have, like, you know, when you first start the game and you're just walking to the house, and that bit is quite long, but it's just, again, it's the terrains are just a little bit varied, there's different paths you can take, there's interesting bits of dialogue which sort of appear in the world in sort of really nice ways, and just that stuff all really helps. And then you get to the house, and it's basically you spend the game sort of just like every character, like every member of your family that has lived in this house in the past and have all since died, has their own room. And part of your, like, your mum was obsessed with, like, not allowing this curse to continue. And as such, she didn't ever want you investigating it. So she sealed up all the doors. And you can kind of, this does this really weird thing where you can, they've all got like a little peephole in them, and you can see through into the rooms, and they're all like, these sort of brilliant reflections of each character. Like, they're all...
Yeah, because have you explained that? The fact that part of it is that the mum, every time someone dies, freaks out and wants to preserve their room, so she completely seals it up.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And then someone else in the family's just drilled a hole through and put a peephole through it so that it's not forgotten.
Yeah. And that's weird because, you see every room, like almost immediately, almost every room anyway. But then it's this whole process of like finding all these sort of weird little hidden routes through the house. And it's a bit like Gone Home in that sense, I suppose. And each time you go to one of these rooms and you find a character, you then, I mean, I guess this is a bit of a spoiler, but you've had a while and I'm not going to go into specifics. You then play through that character's eyes, like not necessarily how they died. No, it was always how they died, isn't it?
It's always how they died.
Yeah. And
it took me, because I knew nothing going in, it took me a little while to realize that that's actually what it was doing.
Yeah, because the first one is like super surreal, isn't it?
It's surreal and it doesn't really explain that she died.
Yeah, it doesn't really make any sense, which I think is quite important in terms of setting, like, you know, the game setting its stall out in that it's like, that like there is like a bit of paranormal stuff in this and you're probably just gonna have to go with it. Like,
well, how do you mean paranormal?
Yeah, I wouldn't say that. It feels more like fanciful than paranormal.
I mean, there's a monster in it.
Yeah, but she's hallucinating, isn't she? That was the point. Like, because for me, I didn't know that it was about her death, that first story.
Yeah.
And then later on in the story, when I realised that, oh, right, these are all about their deaths.
Yeah.
And then I thought back to that story and I was like, oh, right, so she was hallucinating. Because I assumed, and I don't know because I really genuinely haven't read up on anything, but I assumed because she ate those berries, because she was, basically the story was, and don't want to ruin it, obviously, but I'm not really ruining it. Mm-hmm. The story was that the kid was locked in, told to go to her room without having dinner, so she started just eating random shit in her bedroom, and one of them was berries, which I assume were poisonous.
Okay.
And she was hallucinating before she died. And because that's why every story was about eating.
Yeah.
So the cat was trying to eat the bird and the shark was trying to eat the... And so on.
Yeah. Okay, no, I mean...
So I don't know about paranoia, but that was my take on it. I could be completely wrong, but that was my take on it.
Yeah, I mean, I because it had gone in with this whole thing about there being a family curse and it all being a bit weird, I just took that quite literally.
All right, okay.
But I don't know. Yeah,
it all felt like weird, sort of semi-twisted fairy tales to me. It felt fanciful.
Oh, there was definitely a bit of that, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, the guy shipped his house across the sea.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a bit of that involved.
But I think
paranormal says something else. I don't think, I wouldn't describe it as that, but it's otherworldly, it's fanciful. I thought it was really interesting.
Yeah, and basically, you go through these stories. Some are like really quite drawn out. Some are really brief. Some of them aren't amazing. The kite flying one. Eh.
I felt that. I really did. Yeah, I thought that was a bit of a weak one.
Yeah.
And it felt like the game was trying to tell me that this is a really strong one. You know the swing one?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That was probably one of the most affecting ones that I had.
Yeah, even though
I saw where the story was going.
Yeah.
Yet I couldn't stop myself pushing forward and back.
Yeah.
Couldn't do it.
Yeah, for sure.
And it really gutted me while I was doing it as well.
It was the...
Because I knew where it was going.
It was the baby one for me.
That was a killer. I don't even want to talk about that one.
Yeah,
I mean, don't get me wrong. So wonderfully done. If you're going to approach that subject,
yeah,
the way that it did it was incredible.
Yeah.
But, it fucked me up. I don't really want to wear it.
And of course,
you had the guy with mental health issues as well.
Yeah.
And the way that was portrayed was just wonderfully done as well.
Yeah.
Because I felt as a player, I felt in control, but the character wasn't. And so although I was acting out things that were happening, I was constantly thinking, that's dangerous what you're doing there, mate. You know what I mean? Like, what you're doing is dangerous. What the fuck are you doing?
Yeah.
And then it didn't end the way I thought it would end. But the way it ended was perfect in the way it did it all.
Is that the one where you're made to basically do two things at once?
Yeah.
Yes.
I thought that was so well done.
Because you
do fall into that rhythm of just doing this monotonous thing, but there's something else also happening which you're also trying
to... Well, your mind is sort of racing. We've all been there.
It done that so well. I don't think I've had a game where it sort of captures that. Just you're in... you're in like a rhythm of just doing something, which it might be a
It reminded me of driving to work. How many times have you pulled up at work after thinking about things and then thought, I don't remember that drive at all?
Oh, yeah, totally. Yeah. Yeah, all the time.
For sure.
But I love the fact what you're doing is simple enough, but there are two things going on at once. I thought that story was fantastically done.
Mm. And like everyone seems to have different favourites, which is really nice. Like different people get sort of hit by different ones. Like,
yeah, oh, my favourite death was this. All right, mate. My favourite death was the baby one. Oh, Jesus. Get out. Sean.
I just thought again, it's just so tightly paced, and you just, because of the way these sort of little vignettes work, like you're doing something different every like 5-10 minutes, or like, you know, obviously it always returns to you then walking around the house to the next bit, but you don't really mind because these vignettes are so varied and so interesting. And like there was a couple where I was like, I'm gonna have to stop playing for a minute.
Oh really?
Yeah. But I did it in one sitting, which was really cool.
There wasn't much backtracking either, which I was quite impressed with. It felt like it flowed really well. Apart from one where it tells you to go back to a certain place, basically. But apart from that, it all flows really, really well.
Yeah, yeah.
Actually, there was one thing that I didn't understand. There was a bit where there was a loft, and it looked like the loft from Gone Home, where it had like a sign on it and stuff like that. I was like, well, what's up there? But you never go there.
Do you not? I don't know. I don't remember that.
No, I'm pretty sure you don't. There was like a sign on a loft. I could have just been confused. I get like that when I play games.
Yeah, yeah.
Where like there's like really obvious that I haven't picked up.
That wasn't the one with like the photography stuff in, was it?
I don't remember photography.
Yeah, because the one that I was like, this feels really Gone Home in one particular section.
Mm.
But I will say, I enjoyed this game more than Gone Home.
Yeah, for sure.
I enjoyed Gone Home more. I thought there was a lot more hidden away in that story. My major problem with this story is that I didn't feel it had a final point. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
you didn't
punch at the end. We talked about this at the time, didn't we?
I've thought about this, right, because James asked me, how the hell do you finish it then? And I've thought about that a lot since James asked me. And I said, an unexpected death to the playable character would have really drum home the whole theme and finished it off nicely. Now, don't get me wrong, the idea is that, you know, that might have happened anyway, but not while you were playing or doing what you were doing, which would have kept in theme with the other stories. And I thought that's how I would have ended it. And maybe that would have been shit, I don't know. But like that's the sort of ending that I would have thought, full stop at the end of that, beautiful. And it never really come.
See, I appreciated it being left sort of quite ambiguous and like she didn't find any answers because there are none.
I know. That's what we were saying, wasn't it? Yeah. It's like, what's the point?
And again, I can totally get how that would seem like a cop-out. But I liked it.
I don't think it was. I think they did what they wanted to do. It just didn't hit home with me. Do you know what I mean? They were trying to cop out. By the end of it, I was kind of like, okay, next. Nope. Okay. But I, you know, it's hard to. I think the most praising thing I can say about this game is that when I pulled it out of the hat and it was up against Super Mario, I was gutted.
Yeah.
I would have liked this game to have gone further.
Yeah.
And for me, it can't. So let's fuck it. Let's get to the voting. I'm gonna have to vote for Super Mario Odyssey. Sean.
Let's not let it be a clean sweep. What remains of Edith Finch?
That's a fair shout. James?
Mario Odyssey.
Matt?
I mean, I will say Edith Finch spoke to me emotionally more than Mario, but Mario is clearly the better game. I'm going to go with Mario.
Yeah.
It's sad. That's actually quite sad. I mean, don't get me wrong. There are worse games that Super Mario could have faced in the first round. But...
I'm so glad I played it. I heard good things about it, but obviously, James, you bought it a couple of weeks ago, and I'm so glad I did. It might only be 2 hours, but I thought the way it told the story through the words on the screen and it, within the environment, I thought it was fantastic.
Hang on, have we checked if Matt's finished this?
Well, I figured that I did actually check because I wasn't sure about this, and I just thought, well,
did you really check?
Of course I did. It's
Jesus Christ.
It's like, you know, it's under 5 hours long, so I just thought he probably would have done it. You know, he usually manages.
James is checked after you. He's just said he has checked.
Okay.
Right. Next game out of the hat. Future Unfolding, submitted by myself. It's hard to... It's weird. I played this game before it came out. I picked it up. It was a random email in our inbox saying, hey, do you want to play my new game? I watched the trailer and I thought, wow, this looks really interesting. I will give it a go. It's not what I expected. And I know that, I mean, I was so sure this was going to be huge. I genuinely was sure it was going to be huge. And when it came out and it didn't do as well, I was gutted because I can't quite describe what this game did for me. So I played the majority of the game on the Mac, headphones in, usually in the evenings. I think it was only 3 or 4 play sessions that I had it done. I thought it was so well executed and put me in... So, you know when you play a game and it puts you in a bit of a trance and then later on down the line you hear a piece of that music again and it takes you back to that moment of first playing that game because you've had an emotional connection with that game and it means something to you. And so your senses take you back to when you first played it. This game did this for me. It's... an exploration. If you've not heard, if you've only just started listening to us since, after I started to stop talking about this, it's out on PS4 and on PC and stuff. It's a top-down exploration game. You play a character in the woods. Nothing is explained. The more you play, the more you start to understand that actually there's a structure to the game and there are goals that you should be working towards. And there are puzzles that become more and more ingenious the more you play them. It's not procedurally generated. However, there are parts of it that are procedurally generated. There are puzzles that are not the same as... I mean, Matt and I were playing it at the same time and we were talking about the game and we could not relate to each other's experience because Matt was talking about certain puzzles that I'd never heard of and I'd already completed it and it was, you know, it was quite a good back and forth between us. I think I have to nominate... I had to put this game in because it took me to a place that I've never been with gaming. It put me into such a relaxed, weird state that changed my senses while I was playing it. And the ending, we've spoken about the ending before. The ending isn't a, here's what happened. It isn't even any sort of... special thing. It's a series of lights and flashes and imagery, but by the end of it I put the laptop down and went, that just blew me away. And I think it's a sense of discovery of the world around you that does it. It's also a sense of discovery of what the game requires you to do. So the more you play, the more you start to understand that the wildlife react to you doing certain things and you can use that to your advantage, manipulate them to solve puzzles and stuff. But it's also the feeling that I was getting getting while playing it. It put me in a certain state that I absolutely loved. And it felt like I could play it for hours in this trance and snap out of it when I turned it off and reflect on what I've done. And I think it's criminally underrated. I think it's the most underrated game on the list. I think it's the most underrated game of the year. I think it's genius. It looks beautiful. It plays beautifully. The puzzles are very, very special because there's no indication that there's even puzzles in this. And it all of a sudden, you just from exploring and playing and trying things out, you realize that you're actually interacting with the world around you. And that is how you progress. And I got just, the game is beautiful. It's beautiful. And I said to, you know, I was saying at the time, okay, it come out on PC and it might have slipped on like through the net, but when this comes out on PS4, it's going to bang. And it came out on PS4 and it didn't. And now all I'm thinking is stick it on Switch. I just want everyone to play it. Like, I'd love to. I've spoken to one other person that's completed it, and that's Matt.
I have actually finished it, James, before you check.
I did check.
What the end of the world was. And we had the same conversation. Like, we came at it from the same angles, I feel, Matt, that we both looked at it and said, yeah, no, this was special.
Yeah, and I
was glad that I played along with you, because we were comparing notes throughout, and it was that even took it up a notch, because we were like saying, oh, but what did you do for this bit? I've not seen that at all throughout the game. What the fuck are you talking about? You know, the big turtle. I've not seen a big turtle. I've seen little turtles. I've not seen a big turtle. It was just a real eye opener. It was very, very clever.
Yeah, it's really gutting that this didn't blow up, because it really got me in the feels. And it's not a really particularly emotional game, but I'm not sure if it's the music or the way it presents itself, the puzzles that don't really feel like puzzles, but then you sort of naturally, organically, you know, learn that there are patterns and that these are puzzles, and you're just doing these things without even really sort of paying attention. And then as you gradually notice patterns within the world, you're like, okay, well, now I've got to do that to open this, to do this. And I love the feeling of it. It's really tranquil. It feels like you're connecting to nature in some way. And the music's really fantastic. I'm also really gutted that this didn't blow up, because it's definitely one of the standout games of the year for me. Even though this is like, when did it come out? Like January or February? This is so...
I think it was March.
So long ago. It's annoying that it didn't go bigger, didn't blow up, because I thought it was well worth anyone's time.
You punks didn't play it in the end, I assume.
I played it, I just didn't. Yeah.
See, I played it when it came out, but I didn't finish it, obviously. I did a mat. But you see, I was waiting for the PS4 version, but then I never got it, because, I don't know, I wouldn't say it was really expensive when it came out, but it was like more than I was expecting it to be.
It wasn't free, was it, James? It wasn't free.
It wasn't 10 quid. It was like 20 quid.
It was. No, it wasn't 20 quid.
It was much more than that. Seriously. If it had been a tenner, I would have bought it straight away. You know what I'm like.
Yeah, but then you would have tried to sell it for another version. I'm really gutted you didn't play this, Sean, more than anyone else, because I think, when I say didn't play it, I think you got to the point, you didn't even complete a proper level, did you?
I completed like one level, yeah.
I mean, you still have no idea what that game's about. Yeah. Until you start working out the structure of the game and how to progress.
But doing that one level took a long time, though.
I know, but they get quicker once you understand the rule sets. Like, they really do. Yeah. And all right, Matt, what, you took 16 hours to complete it or something stupid? But yeah, it doesn't matter. Like, you get into a zone with it and you start hours, understanding actually. Was it? No, it wasn't.
It wasn't 23 hours.
Yeah, have a look. It's it's over 20.
What? It's over 20 on his
I mean,
thing.
I did take way longer than Dave, but which is weird, because I'm sure in the review guide it said, oh, it'll take between this and this. And I was in the middle of that suggested time, whereas Dave did it way quicker than I did. But I was
I did about 8 or 9 hours. Yeah. I think I smashed through it.
Yeah.
But yeah, oh God, that game, yeah, I just wish more people played it. What's it up against? That's the question. Rhyme, Matt.
Shit. Rhyme is also criminally unlooked, I believe. But I'll go into why I think it's great first. Rhyme is an adventure game.
Before you say that, I've just worked out that confirms that Mario and Zelda can't meet until the final.
What? How does that confirm that?
Well, because they're both different sides of the tree now.
Yeah.
Oh,
fuck.
Well, I don't know. I mean, maybe something might beat Zelda on the way, so.
Do we skip to the final? No, go on.
The final will be Farpoint and Yakuza, probably. Anyway, Ryan. It's an adventure game. On the face of it, it looks like very much like that game company game. So very much in the same sort of vein as Journey and that sort of stuff. It's an adventure game where you are this this child. You wash up on this island and you basically go through, I think, 5 or 6 different locations, solving puzzles along the way. It's interesting. It does some great stuff. It's again much like those other sorts of games. There's no voice. There's no sort of voice acting or anything in it. It's just like weird sounds. It's not even any text on screen, I don't think. You're just going through the world, solving these puzzles, which I thought difficulty wise it was perfectly pitched. They weren't hard, but they were just the right amount of challenge. I knew pretty much instantly what to do, but they were satisfying to complete nonetheless. I can see how some people potentially could call them simplistic, but for me, I thought they were perfectly weighted. There were puzzles, as I said. You go through these various different environments. I think soundtrack wise, it's got an absolutely gorgeous soundtrack. It's really emotive. I can't even recall how the soundtrack goes, but I remember just like going through each of the levels and the soundtrack seemed to really match the environment that I was going through. But I'll skip to the end. Basically, this story, when you finish it, it reframes everything you've seen and done in the game. And the story was definitely building up to something. I didn't quite twig until the last few moments, really. I mean, maybe that's because I'm stupid, or maybe it's just really, really well hidden. But then once you do finish a game and then you go back to it and you look at what you've done, it's like, oh my God, I can't believe I didn't realize this in the past. And like small, tiny little things you saw or did from the very first moment of the game are now reframed in a way that I don't think I've played another game like it, where the ending has changed and reframed the entire experience. I mean, I was enjoying the game as a game before. I think it looked great, sounded great. I thought level design was really good. The levels are fairly open-ended. They're fairly linear, but there's quite a lot to them, and they were directing me in a way that I thought I was just exploring them, but I was clearly being directed down a certain way to finish the levels. But when you finish it, so many things you think back on, you think, oh my God, yeah, that does mean this, and I thought it was absolutely fantastic. And this is a story I'm not going to forget, but possibly ever, frankly. The game has been sort of downtrodden, people think, well, it's just a ripoff of, say, Journey and those sort of ICO, those sorts of games. Obviously, it came out on Switch more recently, and that was apparently a really, really bad port. And I was really gutted because I think a lot of people, I think, James, yourself, one of the people that are waiting for it on Switch, because Switch is such a good platform for these sorts of things. And obviously it got demolished in reviews for that, just because technically it's a bit of a mess.
Slightly
and
frame rates
all over the place. But I don't want that to put anyone off. I mean, it's an absolutely stunning game. And some people might comment that it's just like a ripoff of his other games, but I don't think that's an issue. It's got, even if a game may be a copy or in a similar style or vein of another game, if this game is still good with great level design, visuals, so on and so forth, I don't think that's an issue. And I think the story alone elevates it above many others. And yeah, it does something that not many other games have done for me, story-wise.
Okay, so we get to the voting. Matt, which one are you voting for?
I'm going to go for... I mean, this is also really tough, but I'm going to go Ryan.
I'm going to go Future Unfolding. James?
I'm going with Ryan.
James?
I just said, I'm going with Ryan.
Okay, you're voting Ryan, yeah?
Yeah.
Yeah, he said it twice.
Okay, he also texted me a couple of weeks ago. Here, I've got an idea/proposal for Gotti.
Oh.
My reply was, Guan. His reply was, last year we stitched you up.
Oh, I'm proposing, yeah, I forgot about this.
You and I ally this time and force through our choices. at least for a few rounds, it would be really weird to hear us support each other's choices. Matt and Sean would probably be suspicious and something that something was up. We could do this just for the first two rounds, then knock it off and see how it goes.
James, that's pathetic.
You're a snake.
Totally forgot about that.
Not only
that,
but yeah. You're a lying snake.
The worst type of snake.
So now, you, the gloves are off with you, right? Don't try and make a deal with me and then go back on it on the day. You don't do that.
Yep.
That is fucking rough.
I totally forgot about that.
He tried to lure you in and then still went behind your back and did what he wanted to do.
I mean, an absolute disgrace. He's got no. You've got no way of. That is disgusting, James. Don't try and buddy up with me and then fuck me over. That is fucking bullshit.
I mean, James, last year, you and myself included, you screwed Dave over, got rid of Titanfall in round one, fine. This year, it seems you tried to make amends, but actually what you've done is you've made it worse.
You've made it so much worse.
You tried to get him on side, and then you fucked him over publicly.
Matt, I wouldn't have voted for Persona 5. I wouldn't have voted for Persona 5. And I'm sorry, but I thought I had a deal. I had a deal.
So, have you been going along with Harley for
the
first...
Hang on, wait a minute. Also, Matt, what he's doing here is he's also admitting that he's been screwing you over as well.
Well, no.
Can we go back to previous rounds? What games has Harley suggested?
Life is Strange is through, which was mine. Persona 5 is through, which is James, which is one that I regret.
What was that against?
That was against Night in the Woods. Oh, I mean, it was, to be honest,
I'm not surprised you've forgotten about it already, Matt.
It was 50-50. And yeah, I didn't know about the whole you hadn't completed thing beforehand, if I'm totally honest. I knew about that. I knew James had that in his top pocket.
Back pocket. But
I'll be honest with you, Matt, that wasn't even James that come up with that idea. Someone else filled us in about that.
Probably Sean's on.
No, someone else. Someone else, not even on the show, got involved to let us know that.
Yeah, I think I know.
The thing is, though, I didn't use it against you. James did. He brought that into the limelight, so yeah. You could get angry at me about that. But James brought it up.
No, I'm not. I'm disappointing you, but I'm definitely more angry at James. I mean,
yeah, good. All right, like okay. Matt, do you want to buddy up? I mean, not on this one, obviously. You've got to vote for Rhyme. It's your game. I'm not going to hold that against you, but that's fine. But I'm not letting James get away with this shit. Don't text me and ask for my help and then screw me over like this, James.
That's ridiculous, James. It's embarrassing.
Funny, isn't it? Sean, which way are you voting?
Right, so Future and Fallen didn't grab me. However, I actively disliked Rhyme, so...
Why, Sean? How much have you played of it?
it was the fucking bird bit, man. Like, it annoys me when that game company do this, but they at least generally do it quite well. But when they get, you know, you get a game that's like, oh, it's really peaceful, and there's just some puzzling and platforming, and it's really nice, and, oh, no, here's a bit where you could die. And it's like quite stressful.
Yeah,
and
but it's very, very, very easy to. You're very quick to understand what you need to do. Just go from shade to shade, building to building.
It's boring. That's really and it's like every time the distance that you move from cover to cover is like, oh, it's just enough to make the stressful noise play and the fucking red stuff around the screen appear. And it's just like, I get it. Fuck off. So that,
it doesn't last that long, though, that bit. It's quite short.
No, that bit is over so quick.
But it's not, is it? Because you do a bit of it, and then you get the bird hit by lightning, and you go, oh, brilliant, that's it. And then there's another bit, and you have to do it again. And I hated that bit. Really hated it.
Good, Sean. Good.
That's a shame.
I genuinely think if you gave it the time, Future Unfolding, you'd love.
I'm voting Future Unfolding.
Right, so it's 2-2. James, you got a chance now to save yourself. You know
James,
how ruthless
James,
I can be.
You love Rhyme as well, didn't you?
Yeah, Matt, you've just been... Yeah, but you've also just had a go at me, so...
But James, what game did you love this year? You said to me, Rhyme is definitely one of the games of the year.
You said to me, the gloves are off and all that kind of stuff.
Well, yeah, but your gloves have been off from the very beginning.
No, David being angry, I can completely understand his perspective, and, you know, it's fair enough. Whereas you had no leg to stand on with that, so I'm going to vote for Future Unfolding.
Oh, no, James, come on. Like, this isn't fair. I've had... And is this my last... Oh, I've got fucking Farpoint left. Brilliant. The game I was basically making a point. That's, I was just making a point of bringing it up. That was this is up with my games of the year. Obviously, there are other games in there as well.
I really hope it comes up against Zelda. Farpoint versus Zelda.
Yeah, James, you said you loved Ryan as much as I did. You did, right. It's just a premier point. Just, why
as you said, as you said,
if James doesn't change his vote, we're going to be here all fucking night. So,
well, yeah, so be it, Sean. Strap in.
It's Future Unfolding.
Come on, James. You're going to choose Future Unfolding, a game you haven't played
James,
and don't care about.
He's said his piece. Are you going to change
game
it from Future Unfolding?
I say you absolutely loved.
I told you, I'm changing it to Future Unfolding.
Oh, no.
Oh, you're a twat, James. You're a twat. You're always a twat. You're a twat.
Rhyme's out.
Future this Unfolding's is such through. A shitty week, and this is not making it any better.
Okay, then. Next out of the hat is... Wolfenstein 2: The New Colossus. Ooh. James.
Yeah, this is my fourth choice, and it was a bit of a I wasn't really sure whether to go for it or not because we discussed it like a couple of weeks ago, and there are problems.
It's not a great
with
pitch at the no start, is it?
I know why I'm voting.
There are problems with it because it.
Oh, okay, it gets better.
All right, Matt, do you want to let me finish? Anyway, so. It hasn't got the best combat or level design.
Oh, okay, there it is.
There what is, Matt?
Carry on.
Okay. But it does have something above most...
I'll be honest with you, listeners. This is quite tense. This is getting more tense than I anticipated
no, but
today.
He's not even this week. He's been getting the digs in like last two or three weeks. I'm like... You've eased up on him, so now he thinks he can... He's like, get me down the pecking order.
I've let him off the leash.
Yeah.
So anyway, although the thing with Wolfenstein is it may not have the best combat or level design, but it does have one thing over most of the other games on this list, with the exception of like my choices probably, and I don't know, not Matt's, because obviously, you know, we found out he hadn't even played it. It's got a well-placed and fantastically executed story. See, this is the other thing I was wondering about, Matt, just going back to this. Why didn't you choose this, like which you have finished, over a game that you haven't finished? Just out of curiosity.
Well, I had chosen this, and then turns out you had chosen it later on. So it was on my list, definitely. But yeah, I mean, this was on my list, but you had chosen it first.
He chose Night of the Woods after Wolfenstein 2 was gone.
Oh, okay. That's fair enough.
Yeah.
So, either way, it has a very well-paced story, and it has characters with depth and interesting backstories, and it deals... You see, I also played... Call of Duty World War II at reasonably around the same time, and I just felt that this like dealt with the issues of like, you know, lost horrors of war and all that kind of thing in much more effective ways than that managed, even though it was done with a kind of a, in a sort of a comedy way often, but it really managed to sort of tread that line between like ridiculousness and also like some of the serious subjects it was trying to deal with as well, very well, and it's probably got one of the most satisfying endings to a game ever. And yeah, I loved it. I thought it was very good. It's I'll be honest, it's not my game of the year. It's not the best game I've ever played.
James.
But it's still a very good game. It's still better than most other games on that list.
James, I tell you what, you better fucking hope this is up against Farpoint, because otherwise it's out. You didn't give it much of a shout out there. Should we pick the next one, or did you want to talk about it?
I mean, like shooting wise, I think it's pretty basic, pretty substandard, but and the guns just don't feel great. But story wise, yeah, it's fantastically written story. It's got loads of humour. I loved not only the writing and how fully fleshed the characters were, but I also loved the directing. Like the way each of the cutscenes were shot is really stylish. I'm not sure if there's even the option, but I think it'd be quite entertaining and interesting just to watch the game through the cutscenes, you know, from start to finish. And as James said, yeah, the ending is so satisfying. I do want to go back and play the others, but I'm really glad I played this year.
James, has he completed it?
Well, he told me he has, but I haven't checked yet. What did you?
No, James.
What did you play it on, Matt?
The easiest.
No, I mean, which platform?
Xbox.
Okay. I'll have a look in a minute.
It is, boys.
No, I use Xbox
to you, James. Right, let's see what it's up against. Nier Automata.
Okay.
Automata.
Automata.
From Sean.
Automata. Right, this game, like, shouldn't even fucking exist. It's the most improbable, weird thing. It's a sequel to a game that nobody played, which was also the sequel to a game that nobody played. And for some reason, they got Platinum to make it. And it just, yeah, I don't know who greenlit this and thought it would do well. It did do well, somehow. But it's like, not only is it just odd and, again, a sequel to two games that no one played, but it's so willfully awkward in the way that it reveals how clever it is, or rather the ways it doesn't for a while. This whole thing of, like, you know, people who really like the game are like, ah, you have to play through the game five times before you really know what's going on. Nah, shut up. That's not true. The fans of this game hurt it a bit, I think, because it is a bit difficult to get into. They really enjoy rubbing your face in it. And, like, you know, I've seen people on Twitter. Tamor was playing it, and he wasn't really enjoying it. And he's like, look, I've just got the first ending, and I'm not really enjoying myself. No, sorry, he was quite a way through his second run, I think. And he's like, I'm not really enjoying it. And everyone's like, oh, no, you need to, like, see the third one before you really know if you like it or not. That's, nah. Like, if he's not enjoying it by halfway through the second run, probably don't worry about it. Like, it is true that it just gets more and more interesting and weird the further you go. But if you're not enjoying the combat by that point, then don't, like, kill yourself trying to get through it. I really like the combat. It's not, like, full Platinum. Like, it's not Bayonetta. It's not Vanquish. But there's a bit of shooting and there's a bit of melee action and stuff. But there's sort of quite interesting RPG elements as well, where you sort of mess around with your stats and your abilities by you literally taking computer chips in and out of your own head, and you can just unplug your like main operating system and kill yourself by accident if you don't pay attention while you're doing it. And it just, yeah, the story's absolutely off its face. It borders on, like, anime bullshit. But I actually, you know, managed to stay emotionally invested throughout. And it's the way it tells the story and the way it conveys its ideas in not just, like, here's a cutscene where some stuff happens. Sometimes, like, there'll be, like, a menu item that means something to you and it's really sad. Or there's decisions you have to make. And the structure of the game in and of itself is so odd in that, as I say, you know, people are like, oh yeah, you have to do multiple playthroughs. You do and you don't. It plays off this thing that Nier, the first Nier, did, in that you play through the game, you finish it, and you get a kind of shit ending. And if you bother to then play, you know, do New Game Plus, it starts showing you cutscenes where, like, you can understand what all the enemies are saying. Like, previously they were just talking shit, and it kind of turns out that, you know, not that they're the good guys, but just that they're acting in self-interest, and there's just, like, and basically you're a bit of a dick for fighting them. Nier Automata, the second playthrough, you play as a different character, and it is the same event, but seen through another character's eyes, which some people thought was shit. I thought it was fascinating, and I was, like, playing through the game again, like, being like, oh my god, I can't wait until such and such a thing happens, because, like, this character disappears for several days and I didn't know what they got up to. I thought that was really cool. And then from chapter 3 onwards, it's all new stuff. Like, they are chapters, they're not playthroughs, really. And again, it pulls this trick of, like, getting you to really sympathize with the supposed bad guys. And it's just really fascinating the way everything's revealed to, basically, the whole thing's bullshit in a lot of ways. Like, no one's fighting for who they think they are or for the reasons they think they are. And it's all just, like, a bit awful and miserable. But after all this, you get this ending, which is, like, I mean, should I spoil it? Is it too? I don't know.
No, I definitely should. I mean, I've read about some of the endings and they sound amazing, but that sounds like an experience that someone needs to play themselves.
Like, basically, the way you unlock the very final ending is that you play, like, a stupid mini game, but you get really emotional doing it, and it's partly because of what, like, partly because of what you're doing, partly because of, like, the way the music's handled, and partly because of something you find out after you've done it Yeah, just absolutely incredible. So the first Nier does this thing where you can only get the final proper ending if you delete your save game. And, I mean, that's not a spoiler because that's a really old game. This takes that idea and does something even cleverer with it.
You have to delete your Xbox Live gamer tag.
Throw your console out of the window and then buy a new one, and then you can see the proper ending. Some people didn't like the visuals in it. There are certainly some areas that look incredibly ropey, but there are others that are really beautiful, I thought. The soundtrack is absolutely stunning. Again, it's just this unbelievably eclectic mix of weird stuff. It's, you know, James was saying, like, he puts the Persona 5 soundtrack on just to listen to it. I can't do that with the Nier one because if I'm like stick the battle music on, I'm like getting fucking revved up. I can't do it. Or if I play the ending music, I'm getting really sad or whatever. Like, I'm so attached to it. And again, you just, you know, playing through it and it's so awkward and weird that you just can't believe that millions of dollars or whatever were poured into this and that it got made. It's just such a rare and odd thing, and I love it.
Right, so are we going to vote for a game that Sean describes as total bullshit or a game that James describes as having problems? Let's find out. Sean, which way are you voting?
Nier Automata.
James, what are you voting?
I'm voting for Wolfenstein, but if I had a plain Sean's, I probably would have voted for that. Because the description was good, but go on.
Matt, what are you voting?
I mean, I played Wolfenstein, didn't play Nier, but everything I've read about Nier sounds amazing. And I have looked into it. I think someone at Enix of Sport on a podcast or something, but I've looked into it and it sounds amazing. And I think I'm going to go for Nier.
I did. Cheers, well, I'm going to vote for Wolfenstein because I've played that and I've got a feeling that I won't get on with Nier. And I know from what I've played, I haven't played enough of Wolfenstein, but I know from what I played of it, I will get into that. Not so much the combat, but the story and the characters and that. It's already shown me that, holy shit, I'm going to get into that. So
I've not got around to playing Wolfenstein. I know I will probably love it. I gather the shooting's a bit wank compared to the last one,
it's, but just basically really it was just
like, just stick it on easy and yeah.
So it's 2v2.
Yeah.
What's going to happen now?
Who would like to negotiate?
I'll negotiate.
Right, hang on. What have you got coming up? What can I?
I've got Zelda, so I'm not too worried about that. I don't think much negotiation. I've had.
Actually, can I? I know that doesn't work. I was going to negotiate with Sean, but that doesn't work because he's.
If you want to throw this one, I'll back you.
I'll totally throw this one. If you back me with Yakuza 0, then it's fine.
I mean, what's that going to come up against? Maybe
Destiny.
Yeah, then
you've got to think of that. See, because I've got Future Unfolding, Life is Strange, Zelda. I can't remember my fourth.
Is that good?
Life is Strange.
Machina. That was my fourth choice.
I mean, how far is that going to get?
Matt, I'm surprised you played through Wolfenstein and you're voting for a game that you haven't played.
Yeah, I thought Wolfenstein.
I mean,
great,
I know you've done that already, but you're voting for a game that you haven't played over a game that you've completed. Did you? But I thought you loved Wolfenstein.
I did. I thought it was really good.
But you're voting for Nier Automata.
Story-wise, although Wolfenstein is fantastic and I loved it and I actually played it and finished it, James, before you start anything. everything I've heard about Nier, it just sounds, and story-wise, it just sounds like it does some absolutely crazy, mind-blowing things.
Yeah, but sounds like you haven't experienced it.
It doesn't make any sense, Matt, like doing that.
Yeah, it doesn't make any sense. I think if there's one person that should be changing, it should be Matt.
Well, what's it going to cost you?
Well, what have you got left in it? Farpoint? mate, you haven't got much bargaining going on, have you?
No, but I can vote for one of your games.
Yeah, but my game's the next Machina, which I'm not, you know, it's incredible, but I do want it to go through, but thinking of the other games that are in there, I'm not really... It's not top of my list.
Look, like, you and, might need some help
with Zelda.
And the
other one's Zelda. And if you don't vote for Zelda, what the fuck are you going to vote for? Farpoint.
Can we not make Farpoint the joke of this podcast, please?
No, I think you made Farpoint the joke of this podcast by fucking dominating it, Matt. So is no one going to change?
James, I'll back you on Yakuza 0. Fuck okay. It.
So, James, are you changing to Nier?
Yes.
Okay. Hey. Wolfenstein 2 is out to Nier on a bartering process from Sean Bell. Okay. Next game out of the hat. We are good. It's late.
Already. Better get
it is, isn't it?
We haven't got the first 16 done. Zelda Breath of the Wild, Dave. What else can I say? It's one of the best games ever made. It genuinely one of the best games ever made. I can't believe Nintendo did this. I remember all the talk of Zelda beforehand and being genuinely not interested. I remember the game coming out. I bought a Switch about a month after it came out, and you guys all got it on day one. I remember you guys talking about it and thinking, yeah, but is it though? Like, I genuinely thought, is this the Nintendo thing of, wow, this is amazing, isn't it? Rather than actually, no, shit, seriously, stop what you're doing. This is genuinely incredible. I put the game on, I played it, and from the start, from the very start, I was absolutely blown away. Absolutely blown away with everything that game does, from the physics-based stuff to the feeling of just wandering around the world, to the discovery, to the your heart pounding the moment you first see a divine beast, like you just discover it, from the little secrets involved with the game. Everything about Zelda Breath of the Wild blew me away. I thought I knew what Zelda was, and I think we all knew what Zelda was. We knew what a Zelda game was, and this Zelda game came and broke all those rules. And I know, you know, there's some argument to be made. Well, I wanted bigger, temples or whatever you call them. What they call them?
Dungeons.
Dungeons.
Shrines.
I wanted better dungeons and stuff. Yeah. I call them temples. And I kind of get that. But if we had to sacrifice that shit to make sure that it didn't go back into the Zelda formula, then totally worth it, in my opinion. This was a game that I enjoyed every minute of up until the credits, and then enjoyed it a hell of a lot more after, because the pressure was off that I had to finish the story and then I could just go wandering, which I did on many occasions. And I did all, but pretty much all of the side quests, all of the, the building the town and the wedding and all that sort of shit. And it just, my love for the game grew the more I played it. Which is incredible, because when I started it, I was in love. So this had to be on the list for me. Obviously, it had to be on the list for me. Not only was it incredibly surprising, but it was so well executed that I can't believe the game came out and it did this. I cannot believe it. I remember going to the Switch launch event with you guys and you all getting pumped for Zelda and me thinking, it's Zelda though. I was so done with Zelda, and now I can't wait to see what they do next with it. I mean, granted, the DLC didn't appeal to me. I look at some of the stuff that's in the DLC and I think I was quite happy to let that game go and rest. But I know that it's a game that in several years' time I want to pick up again and play through, because, my word, what an experience. Nintendo have had a stellar year, and this is the jewel. This is just special. It's just special. I can't believe it. I can't believe it. After hearing all the hype when it come out and knowing what that does to someone who's going into something a little bit late, you know, hearing, oh, well, it can't be that good, and then playing it, and your expectations are so high, and it, even if it doesn't go anywhere near those expectations, it feels like a failure to you. But to exceed those expectations is just a sign of absolute genius. Zelda Breath of the Wild is incredible. Anyone else got anything to add?
So I've just gone back. I never touched any of the. Never touched any of the DLC.
You're having a half a Twitter notice.
Yeah, but a pretty big deal now, actually. posted a funny video online, and it's currently on. Let's have a look. It's on 10,691 retweets.
See, that's how you do it, Matt. Not
26,000 likes.
Fuck off, Dave.
The thing is, like, I mean, I can't take any credit. I can't take any credit for that video, right? Because it's just a funny random thing that happened.
Oh, but right. It's also, I was about to say, because I stole it off someone on Reddit.
but it sort of does, like, brilliantly encapsulate why that game is so good in a lot of ways. Because it's not, like, when it first came out, there were all sorts of videos like that appearing out of nowhere. Just weird, funny things happening. And it was just amazing because it was nothing that was really explicitly planned by the developers, but they just made sure that all the rules in that universe are so robust and so consistent that if you think you can try something, it will probably work. In my case, accidentally clocking a bird in the face with a treasure chest that I was holding with a magnet. And it's just, yeah, like, you just think, like, that probably wouldn't work in most games, or it just wouldn't be quite as believable or funny or whatever. And there's tons of that stuff. And, like, I think that tweet's just done so well because it's been, like, so long since it came out. And I've just
Well, of course, there wasn't video capture when it first came
out. That's true,
was it?
Yeah. So yeah, like, people were just filming it on the TV or they happened to have a streaming setup or whatever, yeah. So yeah, so that's just been funny as hell, and just like going back to it now after having many months off and being in a similar place to you, Dave, where I was a bit like I played a lot of it and I don't really see what else it could do. I've loaded up, so I've got both DLC packs in one go, and just like I've not even done any of the actual good stuff. I've just been going around finding all the new armor sets, which are shit, by the way. But
yeah, the armor stuff's a bit of a letdown.
Yeah, but just doing little treasure hunts in that world has been so much fun. And just exploring it again and revisiting old places and finding some new ones and just having an excuse to fuck about and occasionally fight people and just explore a bit.
Have the little musical cues made you feel sick as well?
No.
Like of excitement.
Oh, right,
like,
I see.
Or when I watched your video and I heard that... I was like, oh my god, oh, that was so good when I was playing that. Yeah, ooh, look at that. Fucking beautiful. What was that, the sound it makes when the sun comes up? Oh, fucking hell, I want to just do, like, fucking go back in time and do it all again without any knowledge.
The soundtrack is unbelievable, isn't it? Partly because there's so little of it.
Yeah.
Like... and yeah, it's incredible. Just these little piano motifs and stuff.
That little fuck
amazing.
With an accordion. Oh, got me every time. Just hearing it in the distance. Oh, you beautiful
bastard. I mean, even a bit on Sean's video where you have a sound of you, you know,
lifting the thing.
Out. So I haven't heard that faders because, you know, I sold the game. But, but oh, yeah, that got me in the feels just hearing that stupid little sound.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What's it up against? Should we find out?
Far
point. I know there's one game on there that I'd find it fucking hilarious if it was up against.
Far point.
Horizon would be funnier, I think.
Oh, shit, I forgot I was still in here.
Here we go. Oh, no.
Go on.
Oh, no.
Come on.
Go on.
I know what it is.
Destiny 2.
Yes.
Oh, shit.
Sean.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, I'm so pleased. I'm happy about that.
Yeah.
Why are you happy about that?
Because I was worried it was going to be Yakuza, and then I get screwed, absolutely
oh,
screwed.
That would have been good.
Oh, I'm so happy.
James, if it was Yakuza, I'd have to vote against Zelda.
That's what would have been really funny about it. Knock out Zelda.
Well, I suppose that would be a waste of a favour, wouldn't it, for me? But, right, Destiny 2. Talked about this last week, but let's recap. This was always, like, we weren't sure about this, were we? Like, because the first game, year one, you know, showed a lot of promise but had a lot of sort of structural problems. And the first year's two sort of mini expansions were fine. But then it was only when The Taken King came out that everyone was like, no, this is fucking Destiny. This is really good. And then there was another DLC pack that also wasn't great. So Destiny 2 still could have gone either way. But for me, and I realise I'm not speaking for everyone because I know how the community feels, they fixed everything and they made it so frictionless in everything that you do. Like, it's so, like, apart from actually when you first load the fucking game up, which takes about 10 minutes, it's so quick to just get into doing something, not you know, not only fun, but something that is worthwhile for your character. Like, there's so much stuff to do. Like, and the story's pretty good. That first bit of the campaign.
I thought the whole campaign was fantastic. Feelings.
Well, yeah, the whole campaign's brilliant.
It's the best Halo game in years. I thought it was a, I thought it was a really interesting, well-paced campaign. It looks absolutely gorgeous. And yeah, and the early, the first two levels, well, the first level, I guess. So after the first main level, there's the other bit. I thought that was so well done. Without, I guess we could spoil it, but I'm not going to. Yeah, brilliant.
I just like seeing, you know, all the trailers and stuff and interviews with the dads. Like, oh yeah, you know, we're gonna really explore what it means to, you know, be a guardian that's been cut off from the light. And you know, that was bollocks. But
yeah, that lasted like one level.
Yeah, and you know, and as they're saying this, they're like showing footage of your guardian stumbling through the ruined city, and I'm just like, that's going to be a bit where you push forward, and there's going to be some bullshit reason why you get your light back. And again, pretty much accurate, but it's just so well done.
Yeah.
Like, I'd always said one of the main problems with the first Destiny is that you never go down into the city, you never really see it, this thing that you're supposed to be protecting, and they show it you, and it's fucked. And the soundtrack in that bit is fucking unbelievable.
And when it kicks in right at the end as well of the campaign.
Yeah.
The soundtrack, where you've only got one gun in that, like, the latter part of that second bit is amazing. I've heard that track on YouTube since. It's just so emotional. It's great.
Has anyone experimented? Because, you know, like, the whole point in that first bit is, you know, your ghost is doing his sad voice, which is a bit weird. But it's just like, oh, I can heal you, but I can't revive you. Has anyone tried to die in that bit? Like,
no, I haven't tried. Even when I was playing it through on the Xbox, there's part of me going, I wonder what happens if you do die.
But it feels like
it's just checkpoint.
I think it probably does just checkpoint you, doesn't it?
Yeah.
But when you do it for the first time, you don't even have that curiosity. It's like, no, I need to survive this.
I was totally invested at that point because it was
and that was such a problem with the first game, is that it was enjoyable, but who gave a shit about what was happening? And then 2 minutes into the new one, you're like, oh my god, I care.
Sean,
like,
I'm so with you, and I'm a little bit gutted that it's up against Zelda. But I'm so with you. I mean, I love it, and although I can't relate to what people are complaining about, whatever, I can kind of see what they're saying, but I've not had that experience. I've enjoyed playing it. Like, I mean, I've put collectively, I've put probably 80 to 90 hours into this, and I am still enjoying playing it. Like, really enjoying playing it. Yeah. And it's one of those things, as you say, it's one of those things that I never had with Destiny, where I was on the way to do something, but I've got sidetracked with so much other shit and haven't felt like I was getting angry that I was getting sidetracked, because everything I was doing was fun. Yeah. I love it, and I can't relate to people that are saying that it's not as good as Destiny 1, because I think it blows it out of the water.
I see what people are saying when they're like, ah, but they've like removed things from the first game. I feel like, to me, that's not a removal, that's just streamlining. Like, I felt that by taking away some of the random perks from weapons and stuff, and allowing you to get to the end game, I was going to say allowing you to get to the end game more quickly. I don't even actually know if that's true, because the campaign's pretty substantial, right?
Yeah, it is substantial. But, and I must admit, I am flying through my level. I'm already at 275.
Okay.
On the Xbox One version. I've only been playing it for about a week and a half.
Yeah. So I felt like I was very quickly able to like start thinking about character builds. And again, I understand that for each subclass, there's basically only two, like in terms of your abilities, there's only two builds to pick from. Whereas previously, you could sort of mix and match things up a bit. But I've had loads more fun like building up a collection of exotic items and being like, right, so the perk on that relates to this class. So if then I have this class, if I want to diversify my damage types, I need weapons that do this damage and this damage. And so what have I got that does that? And then what, you know, what types of weapons are they? What ranges are they good at? What abilities do they have? And just coming up with like...
I've changed my subclass builds. More than I have in Destiny 1.
Yeah, for sure. Like
because it mainly down to challenges and stuff, but...
Yeah, but in Destiny 1, you picked a favourite and that was it, wasn't it, really?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I've switched it up a lot more.
Yeah. So, yeah, and I feel like I've been able to engage with that stuff way more than I could with the first game. And I think that's because they've streamlined it a bit. And I understand if you're a full-on obsessive, then, I don't know, maybe there isn't so much there for you. But, no, I think it's perfect.
Okay, cool. Well, what way are you voting, though, Sean?
Vote for fucking Zelda.
I'm voting for Zelda. Matt?
Yeah, Zelda.
James?
Yep, Zelda.
Right. Is that the first whitewash? I think that might be the first whitewash.
Yeah, of course it is.
Destiny 2. Right, okay. Right, next out of the hat. We have Horizon Zero Dawn, the listener's choice. We all know what this is going up against. I played a hell of a lot of Horizon Zero Dawn, and I can see why this is listener's choice. And if you remember, as I said, I played Zelda Breath of the Wild a month after everyone else. It was unfairly compared with, like, because it was a week between this and Zelda.
Something like that, yeah.
It was unfairly compared because they're two very different games trying to do different things. Horizon Zero Dawn took the sort of tried and tested open world game and almost perfected it, in my opinion. I think the only thing that was missing was there was a lot of walking in the early parts of that game, which obviously get improved later when you get to override animals and stuff like that. But it definitely had that Far Cry edge of fearing everything. And it was like, you know how in Far Cry you fear the world around you and you're trying to work out the rule sets and all of a sudden there's a snake on your neck and you're like, what the fuck is going on? This is really actually quite terrifying. And then within a few hours of play, once you start understanding what the wildlife is and what it does and how you can use it to your advantage and so on, you start to feel more powerful, not through your numbers going up, but more through A, unlocking abilities, and B, understanding what's going on around you. Horizon Zero Dawn like excels at that. You know, once you start learning how to take down these robots, you become fearless of them. And that's where the game really starts to roll. Like, the story's decent anyway, but and that initially drives you on. But then once you start, you know, getting into the mechanics of the game and understanding what's going on, that's when you start pushing forward and it starts to go up levels. You know, it's got the usual shit of, oh, this unlocks areas and this does this, and you load up the map and it's full of icons and stuff like that. But it's less of a problem here because it's not about these... Like, when people say, oh, it's full of icons, yeah, that's shit. But when those icons are enjoyable things to do, it's not a problem. You know what I mean? You're not sitting there going... It's only when it's filled with tedious shit that the game's asking you to do that it becomes daunting. When you get a game like Horizon Zero Dawn, where those objectives and those missions and all of that stuff is exciting to experience, then your map being full of icons is actually quite exciting rather than daunting and, you know, like it is in fucking Watch Dogs or whatever. And yeah, it's got bases to clear out and it's got stuff that you've done a million times before. But I think the setting is excellent. I think visually it's absolutely stunning. The first time you see a long neck, it takes your breath away. And then you realise that you have to climb it is fantastic. Like, it just is. It's a really special moment. You know, they're a bit like giraffes, and you know I like those fuckers. it's a good game. It's a really good game. It didn't make my list because I think the other games on the list are for me, the ones that I submitted, beat it. But I can see why so many people wanted this on the list. Definitely.
Did you play this? Do you play this before Zelda or after?
Me? Yeah. Before it.
Yeah.
Because I remember talking about it, and a lot of you played it after.
Yeah.
And
so this was the first game.
I kind of get what you're saying, but I don't think they're comparable. They're totally different things, and I think it was a bit unfair to say, oh, but after Zelda, you can just climb up any mountain. You can't do it on this. Well, you're not supposed to. That's not the game.
No, but this is the first game I played after Zelda, and it's just, I mean, I think any game would have suffered playing after Zelda, but yeah, especially totally. Playing a game where it's an open world, but it feels very much like the open worlds we had experienced up to Zelda. And Zelda felt like it took a lot of influences and things that we already knew and then changed them in ways that we didn't think was possible, and it created an incredible open world because of that. The fact I played this immediately after, I wanted to love it. And yeah, graphically it looks amazing. I think the writing is really good in some of like the small, side missions, but I bounced off this game so hard. I did the proving. I did like 4 or 5 missions after that.
Matt, did you give it much of a chance?
No. I mean, I did like 4 or 5 missions after the proving. I barely did like 2 hours, 3 hours. I played and I thought, I haven't got the energy to do this. I mean, I know it's all the things you just mentioned. There were loads of icons on the map. It said go here, go there, go here. Obviously in Zelda, you might have a mission marker at a certain place, but you actually spend like, you know, multiple hours just doing all sorts of random stuff on the way to that mission mark. Whereas here, I felt like, okay,
but
that's
every,
where I go.
Everything
I'll walk,
you did in this
a straight
game
line
felt
there,
beneficial.
Straight line here.
It just, like everything you did, all those icons, it felt beneficial, whether it was through story or unlocking stuff or gathering supplies. It felt worth doing.
Yeah.
It didn't feel like a linear, here, go here, do this, do that now, do this. Oh, you unlock this, which doesn't really mean anything, but fine.
It didn't have that feeling. I played straight after Zelda, this just felt so by the numbers. I know it probably isn't the case. Had I played it after other games or played it now, I'd probably be feeling totally different. But me personally, at the moment of time I played this, immediately after Zelda, it just felt like, oh god, I can't do this type of open world game. I've just had that. It's a shame really, because it's got obviously clearly got loads of great points going for it, and I love the concept. And even like capturing or, you know, taming some of those like robot animals was interesting. And graphically it looks stunning, but
you didn't even get to a point where you could jump on their backs, right?
No, I got on one long neck and then that was it.
No, I mean you can literally ride them. Like
yeah. I rode one of them things, but it was just, yeah, I was done.
Okay, all right. Well, let's see what it's up against.
I also struggled with it. Just to add, I'm basically on the same page as Matt on this one.
Shut up, Sean. Right, let's see what it's up against. It's up against Nex Machina.
Ooh,
that's one of mine. Nex Machina is a game that I've always had a love for twin stick shooters. I love how they can make you focus. I love how they can, you know, there's certain types of games where you're in the zone, and twin stick shooters do that for me. It makes me block everything else out around me and really get into it. And Nex Machina is the only game to beat Geometry Wars Evolved as my favorite twin stick shooter. It's perfect. And the more you play, the more you realize how perfect it is. Initially, it looks like there's hardly any content in it, but then you realize that actually it's all about secrets. And the more secrets you find, the more your score improves and the score chasing going back and forth. John Denton and I went back and forth with a bit of a score challenge. I know that I will never uninstall that from my hard drive. Like, I just won't. I never uninstalled Geometry Wars from my 360. I will never uninstall Nex Machina from my PS4, because that game is so beautiful. Like, it's so good to play. It's so responsive and fun that I can't imagine there being a better twin stick shooter than this. And it's a genre that I enjoy playing. I love. But it's certainly, the problem with that genre is that not many games bring new stuff to the table. And this it does. It brings certainly brings a lot to the table. Certainly a lot of the stuff that it's brought to the table was taken from Resogun. But the way it's implemented in this is just perfect. Like, it's fucking brilliant. It's fucking brilliant. And I could play that, like, forever. And I will. I'll be playing that for years to come. Years to come. So, yeah. Horizon versus Nex Machina. I have to vote for my own game. I'm going Nex Machina. Matt.
It's a tough one, because... Well, actually, it's not a tough. I think I'm going to go for Horizon.
What?
Okay, that's interesting. Why?
Because... well, I haven't played Nex Machina. Twin Stick Shooters are fine, but Geometry Wars was okay. I didn't really have a 360 at the time. It blew up, and I didn't really play it like everyone else did. And yeah, I'm going to go with the Will of the People and go Horizon Zero Dawn.
Well, I'm assuming James is going for the Will of the People as well, right?
What, for this one? Yeah. Well, because this is difficult, because I haven't played either of them, so...
Yeah.
I don't know. I what's Sean doing? Because I don't know.
Sean's going Nex Machina, mate.
Right.
I ain't even played it, but I know I'll enjoy it more than I did Horizon.
All right, James? Well, I'm going to go for Nex Machina as well, because it's 10-12 and I want to get...
James,
I can't believe it's 10-12.
Why do you do that just because it's 10-12?
I find it hilarious that James has suddenly don't care about the Will of the People when Titanfall 2 is not involved.
James, come on. You, just because it's quarter midnight, you're going like, oh, that's it, just pick that one.
All your principles are
going to pass the first 16.
And, you know,
if the EU referendum vote had been held at quarter to midnight...
Exactly. James, we all like Brexit.
Well, we'd still
up,
be leaving, but, you know.
Yeah, where's Farage?
Right, next one out of the hat. Yakuza 0, James, make it quick.
Yeah, because it's quarter to midnight, James, so are we up?
I know, this is the problem, because, I mean, this is one of my big ones, which I know means that almost certainly all of you are going to want to kill it, but it's... I know, this is...
Mate,
the game...
I'm contractually bound, eh? Go for it.
It's true. I mean, this is the game that maybe, I'm not even joking about this, actually kind of consider getting a tattoo of a dragon on my... like hairy fat back, you know, because...
No, I'd love to see that. James is so not a tattoo guy.
Yeah,
either.
That would be amazing.
But yeah, I don't know, Chen wasn't that keen on the idea, but I mean, it's...
Oh shit!
I mean, this is the first Yakuza game. This is the first Yakuza game that I've played, and I was honestly kind of blown away by it, because it was exactly what...
It's the first computer game
that
you
played.
I thought
he said Yakuza game.
Yeah, I thought he said that too. Oh, I was like,
right,
that's what he played.
It sounded like he said computer
and
game.
You can play about me not finishing games.
He's not playing one till Yakuza 0. Mm. Go on.
So anyway, I mean, I was blown away by it, because it was everything that I kind of wanted from this style of game, you know, from like a Shenmue kind of game, which it's not really, but, you know, it's kind of exactly what I wanted. And it's the way that it balances absurdity.
So, sorry, James, is it one of these types of games or not?
What do you mean?
Well, you said it kind of is a Shenmue game, and you said it kind of isn't. So, which is it?
Well, it depends. I mean, it kind of is in the terms of it is like a walk around, you know, sort of exploring everywhere Japanese GTA style game. But then also, it's not, because it's the tone is so completely different. Is that okay, Matt?
Yeah, that's fine. Yeah, carry on.
Okay. So anyway, the way it balances. I mean, the thing I like about it the most is that the way it balances absurdity and a really deep and engaging plot, and I feel this was the most amazing side of it. I mean, the world's and the main story is like really kind of dark and very depressing, but then it also has these side quests which really sort of lighten the tone and are largely ridiculous. I mean, there were so many like memorable moments in this game for me. I mean, like stopping a girl from selling her used underwear to perverts, helping to arrange a film shoot for a cooking TV program, and just there was also the dude that was just wandering around the city wearing his pants. And he just said, I'm a sex addict and I'm looking for the girls, and you can, like, you know, help him if you want to or not. It's just really, just lots of really odd stuff.
When you
game.
Say help him.
What do you mean?
I mean, finding women or just...
Yeah, basically finding women, Sean. It's
okay.
It's pretty unapologetic. You're voting for this anyway, so it's fine.
I mean, that's not really, I know, I'm just...
But no, I mean, the thing is, this is, but the thing is with the game is it's, it's so easy to get involved in these side quests, and when you're even like advancing the main story, and they really sort of offer this really brilliant sort of counterpoint to the other action, which is really sort of depressing and dark, but in a, you know, told in such a good way. And even though most of the game is kind of like, go here, talk to this person, fight, I didn't care, because in almost any case, in any of the stories that you're engaged in, they're all so sort of funny, weird, or sort of, or sometimes touching as well. And nothing feels kind of forced with it. And I mean, the thing that I loved about it so much, and this is why I mentioned the Shenmue thing, is that it's just so atmospheric. And the way it depicts like Japan of the 80s is just incredible. And I mean, also, I mean, I played Kiwami, which was the remake of the first game, like later on in the year. But that really made me appreciate Zero even more, because it makes you sort of realise how refined Zero is compared with other games in the series. They've really like nailed this formula now, and I can't wait for 6, because yeah, this was one of my highlights of the year, and I just love, like Kiryu, I love that guy. he's such a fantastic character.
A very passionate speech. Now, let's find out if Matt can equal that with his chat about Farpoint.
Okay.
Matt, over to you.
I prepared a monologue.
I'm expecting a stitch up here, but go on.
Now, if you asked... I'm not doing that at all. Farpoint. Okay, right. The reason this is in the list... I'll go for away.
It's probably the most controversial one, right? That's on this list. This is the one that everyone was picking out.
Yeah, this is the one I got a lot of shit for over the week, right? I don't care. This is, in terms of experiences, this is definitely up there for me as one of the best. Farpoint as a game is a VR first person shooter, very much in the same, it's an FPS, but it's VR. And that also means it's quite basic in terms of what it does. If this game wasn't a VR game, it would be cast aside as the most basic FPS of the last like 10 to 15 years, and it wouldn't be given a time of day. But the fact is that it isn't a 2D game. It is a VR game, and that elevates it to something that's well worth talking about, I think. So you can play with the pads, and I'm sure that's fine. I bought it with the VR aim controller, which is a physical life-size gun controller, which definitely elevates this experience. The aim controller's got all the same buttons and sticks as a DualShock. So it's got triangle, square, circle, and X. It's got the two sticks. It's got everything, a D-pad, everything you normally have on a DualShock. So you can use these two sticks. You can use one of them to move around, the other one to strafe. You can obviously use all the buttons on one to reload and shoot, but what it does in VR is really, really affecting. You can, when, in terms of say zooming, or to get aim down sights, you don't just press a button and then you're suddenly in aim down sights mode. It asks you to physically lift your gun up to your eye. And when you do, you'll see basically a red crosshair on the hollow sight on the top of the gun. And one of the most amazing things happens is that you instinctively, or at least I did, you instinctively close one eye to sort of get a better view down the barrel of the gun. I haven't shot a real gun, but this is what I imagine would happen were you to pick up a real gun and someone asks you to shoot in the distance. So these are just natural things. It doesn't say, hey, to zoom in this game, you pick up the gun, you close one eye, you look down the barrel, you just do that naturally. And that's what elevates VR games, when you instinctively do things and they work in the game. Now, as I said, as an FPS, this is super basic, but it's a really enjoyable, I think it's like 5 to 7 hours. It didn't outstay its welcome. Control wise, you can do like the standard, like VR controls, whereby you can turn in like 30 degree increments round, and that's obviously done to minimize nausea. After a short space of time, I was actually able to change it to full FPS controls. So I was circle strafing, I was doing all sorts, and it felt absolutely absolutely class to be so strafing, but playing his game, playing this first person shooter, lifting the gum up, you know, to zoom in. You can put it over your back to switch weapons, although I was using a button at that point because it's just quicker. You can reload doing another real life action. You can like a duck. You can do all sorts of stuff. And I think if you've got a PSVR, I think it's absolutely essential. It's also got some multiplayer, online multiplayer stuff. You can do co-op as well. I thought it is a basic story, but really, really enjoyable. And also just being in the cutscenes, it makes such a difference. So I wasn't just watching a cutscene between two people. There are bits where you're basically part of the cutscene, because the story is that you are following two people, who are lost in this planet, and you're basically living through these like VR simulations that they've left along the way to find these people. And just the fact that you can stand alongside these people in these cutscenes, you're at the same height, you're shoulder to shoulder, it makes what would ordinarily be a potentially quite embarrassing or cliched or obvious like cutscene really, really rather affecting, because you're right there next to them whilst, you know, looking at sort of the Martian planet in the background. As basic as this game is, this made me think, my God, imagine like Halo was in VR. Imagine if these much more accomplished, much more complex FPS games were in VR. What would they be like? Because this does, when you just run around, circle strafe, fire with a physical gun in VR, you think, God, this does feel like the future of first-person shooters. This feels utterly amazing. Imagine if something like Wolfenstein or Destiny or whatever, what was like this? I mean, yeah, I thought it is really fantastic, well worth it. It got like middling reviews when it first came out. But I didn't want to have a game in the year list where I didn't mention this, because I think in terms of experiences, it's definitely up there for me. It may not be as accomplished as other games we talked about, but my God, it is fucking brilliant.
I'll tell you what, Fett, Matt, you made a good shout of that. I ain't going to lie. You made a good shout of it.
I was with him until the... Yeah, but imagine if good games were in VR.
Oh, no,
yeah, I was also with him until... Oh, the good thing is you're at the same height as the other characters.
Well, imagine if games with much larger budgets and, you know, and a history development and stuff. You know.
See, when you describing it as being like rather like a kind of a really average game with an interesting peripheral, I was just thinking like Mad Dog McCree or something like that. It's, you know... That kind of thing.
Right, okay, listen, let's get to voting. Matt, what are you voting for?
Farpoint.
Boys, should we do this all at the same time?
Yeah.
3, 2, 1,
Yakuza 0.
Okay.
James didn't do it.
I did.
Fucking hell, James.
No, I did do it. But I was scared.
Yakuza 0 through.
I was really scared, but go on.
Sorry, Matt, it had to go. Fucking hell, Farpoint. What were you thinking?
I mean, I don't care. I just had to mention it, and I'm glad it was mentioned.
We're down to the final eight.
I went on the same as Destiny 2, so it's not bad.
It's midnight. We're down to the final eight. Now, if you're listening and thinking, oh my God, this has gone on for too long already, don't worry. We get straight to the voting in the next few rounds.
This is ridiculous. We've gone.
First quarter final.
We've got like 16 emails and 40 tweets to read through.
And Matt's got to list the amount of fucking social media we're on. Quarter finals, first round. Life is Strange Before the Storm versus Persona 5. James, which way are you voting?
That's quite tough because I really like both of these, but I'm going to have to stick with Persona 5. I know it's probably going to go out, really? But I'm going to stick with it.
I've got to go Life is Strange. I mean, I've not played Persona 5, but my word, Life is Strange is good. Matt?
Yeah, I mean, I've got Life is Strange. I played the first half an hour or so. Check if you want, James.
And
I'm excited to play the others. You know, and the third one, it comes out later this week. So for me, it has to be Life is Strange.
Sean?
Yeah, Life is Strange. Sorry, James.
Oh, that's okay.
Persona 5 is out. Next one, Super Mario Odyssey versus Future Unfolding. I mean, I love Future Unfolding. I knew that it wasn't going to make Game of the Year for us because only Matt and I played it. But I couldn't possibly vote for it over Super Mario Odyssey. So though it's James's game and mine is Future Unfolding, I've got to vote for Super Mario Odyssey. Matt?
Yeah, Mario.
James?
Yeah, also Mario.
Sean?
Mario!
Alright, screaming for it now. Nier Automata versus Zelda
Oh, fuck's sake.
I can't believe we agreed that it'd be Nier Automata, and I can't say it any other way now for some weird reason. Nier versus Zelda. I'm voting Zelda.
Zelda.
Yep, Zelda.
Yep. Zelda all the way.
Nier's gone. And this is probably the hardest one of the quarters. Next Machina versus Yakuza 0.
Okay.
I mean, I've got to vote Next Machina.
I've got to vote Yakuza 0, obviously, because I brought it
up. Which way are you guys going, based on the discussions we've had?
I don't know, man. That, because they're so different as well. Like, it's proper apples to oranges. Like, you can't... Yeah. I don't know, like, because my relationship with Yakuza has been so odd in that all the right people have been banging on at me for years about how good it is. And I feel like I'm just keeping it to one side for a rainy day. As it, like, as if there's ever going to be a time where I'm like, do you know what, I'm going to get into a series of games where there's seven mainline entries and God knows how many spin-offs. Like, something about them has always appealed. It's just for some reason I've never taken the plunge. And I know Zero is like the way to do it, and especially because they seem to be remaking the rest from one onwards now.
I genuinely think you'd like it, Sean, because it's...
I know.
Sean, what's more of a guaranteed... Like,
well,
there's
this
always
is the thing.
That chance that you won't enjoy Yakuza, but I don't think there's any chance of you not enjoying Next Machina.
Yeah.
Yeah, but come on, twin stick shooters, they're like 10 a penny. Like, there's loads of them.
Good ones.
Not like this, mate. Not like this.
Fucking...
This is literally the best game in its field.
John, which way are you going?
Judas.
Matt.
Jesus. I only said I'd vote for it once. It wasn't a guarantee. I'm not going to vote. I'm not going to get it to the finals.
Matt.
Yakuza.
Really? Yeah. You right, okay. So 2-2, but I'll say this. Who were you angry at, Matt?
But I'm just thinking about the better game. Yeah. And
what are you talking about? You've not played neither.
He's not letting personal feelings get in his way.
Which I respect you for that, Matt. You know, I respect that.
Oh my God, how can you still vote for it after that? I respect you for that. I have done my research on what games you've completed and what games you haven't.
Yeah, James, I'm not doing this for you, I'm doing this for me. Right.
Why? You've not played it, you
dickhead. No, but if I think about it, if both those games in front of me, what would I rather play? I would rather play Yakuza.
And you'd love it.
Who gives a fuck? You've not played either.
I give a fuck, Dave,
and James has fucked you over constantly.
That's why I give a fuck.
When did you have morals?
Well, if you said which one you want to play, I would play Yakuza. That's it. That's my vote.
Well, I'm not changing.
Neither am I. I aren't changing either because it's brilliant.
So it's either Sean or...
You should change, really, shouldn't you?
I mean, I was on the fence. So if it means I get to go to bed 10 minutes earlier, then yeah, I'll switch.
I can't believe that's like Matt's going, I'm doing it for me, I'm doing it for me. And you're like, fuck off, I want to go to bed. Seriously, Matt, I cannot believe you've gone with... You haven't done it for you. You've not fucking played it,
I'm saying I'll do it for James over there. Who else will I be doing
it for? You're an idiot.
Who would I be doing it for? It's not for me. It's not for James.
James has torn you apart.
I don't care about him. I just think about... If I'm thinking about the games, then that's all we should be caring about here.
Here's a chance to fuck over James back, to get back. And you're going, oh, I think I'll prefer that without playing either of them. So it is literally a 50-50 for you. And you're
So what's the score? 2-2?
Yeah.
2-2, yeah.
Are you either way, Sean?
No, Sean's changing.
Yeah, no. But are you easy either way, Sean?
I am easy either way.
And is this your game of the year, James?
It is, yeah.
Then I'm going to go with Next Machina.
I knew you'd do that, you prick.
I mean, is that it?
So just to be clear, for the record, I'm now changing my vote back to Next Machina. So
thank you.
Go to bed.
Oh yeah, I forgot about that.
Say what, for it's a second then, I had all three votes and then you just changed it around though.
Well no, you can change it around, but I don't think it's going to happen now, son.
I want to go to bed as well. It's fine. I mean, I'm quite amazed actually that Yakuza...
I want to go to bed. No, that is such an awful fucking...
I'm just amazed that Yakuza 0 got this far, to be honest. So I'm quite happy with that, to be honest. I thought it was going to go out in the first round. So, yeah.
Life is Strange. Semi-finals. Life is Strange versus Super Mario Odyssey.
Mario Odyssey.
Yep.
Yeah, obviously. Mario Odyssey.
It's tough. It's tough for us, James.
It's Mario Odyssey, isn't it?
It's got to be. It's got to be because, you know, we haven't had episode 3 yet. If episode 3 is as strong as 1 and 2, then it would really give Mario Odyssey a run for its money.
What if it's terrible,
and I'm not
though?
Fucking kidding.
What if it's awful? They just screw up
everything. What if it's
everything?
Awful? You can't... No. Life is Strange is gone. Zelda, next Machina.
Zelda.
Even I've got vote Zelda. I would like to point out that 3 of my choices are in the semi-final. Just saying. Zelda versus next Machina. Yeah, I vote Zelda.
Agreed.
Yeah, me too.
Okay, well, Zelda. It's the final that everyone was kind of expecting. But it could have... I mean, they were lucky that they were drawn in separate parts of the tree. I did worry about them facing off at the beginning and then the whole thing being a fucking whitewash. But here we are. Super Mario Odyssey versus Zelda. And can before we start voting on our game of the year, I would like to say that I'm in a situation now where I have no idea which way this is going to go. I genuinely don't, because we have actively avoided talking about what out of these two games we would prefer. Like, what is our preference for game of the year?
I've got a pretty good
idea. We haven't
really
mentioned to each other what our... I think I have. I will say this. I think, in terms of Zelda versus Mario, I think James is more Mario. I think Sean is more Zelda.
Mm-hmm.
And Matt, I think, is more Mario. But I'd like to find out how correct I am. So James, which way are you voting?
I'm going to vote with Mario Odyssey. Can I explain why?
Yes.
The main reason is because, even though, like you said, like going back to Zelda after finishing it, there is a lot to do, I still didn't feel that I enjoyed doing that quite as much as I have with Mario Odyssey. I've enjoyed
the... No, but the build up to the end, like the main ending, was much better in Zelda than it was Mario.
But the after game, though, I felt is superior in Mario Odyssey. It's been better.
Okay. Sean.
Do you know, like, for me, Zelda takes it purely because it's such a brilliant reinvention of an already good but arguably stale franchise. Like, I can't even imagine how nerve-wracking it must be to take such a beloved, long-standing but formulaic thing. Because, you know, there's always the risk, like, no matter how good it is, there's always the risk that people just be like, but it's different, so fuck off. And just that they've found a way to modernise it, but make it its own thing. Like, it borrows so many things from so many games, and yet totally feels like its own thing. Like, you play Mario Odyssey, and it's like, it is another incredible Mario game. But playing Zelda, you're like, we now live in a world where Zelda is a different thing now. Like, that's like such a fundamental shift.
Totally.
And to even attempt that, and to get it so right, is just such an achievement that, for me, nothing else tops it.
This is the most interesting one for me. Personally, this is the most interesting. Matt, out of the whole episode, out of this whole voting process, this one I'm really interested to hear which way you're going to go.
Bearing in mind that you did sell the game pretty quickly.
Right, forget everything else.
Not pretty quickly.
Forget everything else, Matt. Which way are you going to vote?
I mean, both of them are so different. But for me, there is only one answer, and that's Zelda. It's not just game of the year; it could be like game of the last like 5 years. I've loved every Zelda I've played, and I know you weren't too psyched in the run up. I saw the first trailer and I thought, okay, I don't need to see anything else. I know it's gonna be great, but how great it was surprised me. Frankly, I mean, this definitely gave me feelings of how I felt when I played Ocarina of Time. it you can see so many influences from games like Metal Gear 5, Portal, there's probably tons of others. Nintendo have taken those influences and they've given them a Zelda spin, and like the feeling of adventure, I've never really had anything like it, frankly, before. Like, obviously there are towers you climb up and those unlock the map. But before then, you can just walk around the world without even knowing. There's not like what's around the next corner. You're not even sure if there is a corner. What is there even a corner at the end of this road? It's just that feeling was amazing. And yeah, I just loved it. I mean, it's a little bit tainted in a way because my Switch was the top fan was fucking up, so it was hot.
I played the whole bit again, didn't you?
No. So what I did was, so I basically spent 55 hours and I'd done one of the Divine Beasts. 55 hours, I was happily just walking around, wandering around. I could have spent another like 200 hours doing that stuff. But then obviously you can't like move a save file on Switch, and I couldn't play my Switch for more than like 5-10 minutes before it just turned itself off. When it was in the dock, it was getting way too hot and it was shutting down because the fan on top had was knackered. So I had to send it back to get a replacement. I knew I couldn't move the save file, so I spent 55 hours, and then I spent one weekend hammering it, and I did the other three beasts and finished the game in like 15 hours after that. And even that was like a really different experience, because you know I was just really going from one to the other, doing all towers, doing all divine beasts. But even that was a really thrilling experience. I'm really glad now that I've got a replacement Switch. I don't have a save file. So that's really disappointing, but even just seeing Sean's video the other day, I was like, oh man, it's like the music. It's still I that video made me want to buy the game again. I had
Matt,
such...
did you get to the end?
Well, yeah, I finished it. That's not a disappointing thing actually. Like when you finish a game, you basically go back to before the end of the game. I would have loved it, and I'll definitely say this in the show. If you do the ending and then you can carry on. I know you have a little star in your save file, and I don't expect the entire like world to change and everyone say, oh, this thing happened. I just want to like carry on. And whereas in Mario, the campaign in Mario was fantastic, but it wasn't really challenging. I love the fact I'm still playing. I'm going to play Mario way more than I would play Zelda again after finishing it, although obviously there's DLCs and stuff out for Zelda. But so Mario's very different, but if just what Zelda did, it's an absolute mind-blowing game. It's such a risk, and it's incredible experience, and definitely game of the year for me.
I will say
I
was just gonna say so that complaint about the Zelda ending I totally agree with, and it was really cool to get the first ending on Mario Odyssey, and then it's just like, yeah, everyone's just like, let's go on fucking holiday. Like, it's fine. Like all all the areas you go to, like everyone's just like, yeah, everything's great. Let's just fuck about.
I think if this game let you explore the world after the events, I don't think this the best game of all time would even be a discussion anymore.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because that would have just been unreal.
Yeah. Like, I don't understand why they've not done it.
Shrines. The shrines, I mean, there are hundreds of them. Everyone feels unique. Everyone feels like a little challenge.
Well, that's not totally true, is it?
Every shrine I've tried, I've loved.
What, even the combat ones?
Okay.
But they didn't feel unique. There was quite a few of them that were just the same. Okay, so it's down to me. Even as far as about 3 weeks ago, this was no contest for me. Zelda would win flat out. The past 3 weeks of playing Mario Odyssey, well, in fact, actually, since completing the 500 moons bit, that game raised in the rankings for me so much, because the stuff that I was doing after and the stuff that I'm still doing, is so perfect and so beautiful and so wonderful. And watching my son get into that game has been an absolute joyous experience that I will never forget. Like, I will never forget watching my son fall in love with computer games well, you know, whatever. Some people say, it's not a computer game, it's on a console. Shut up. Watching him fall in love with video games is something that I will hold dear to my heart forever. Absolutely forever. It's his reaction to playing it, his watching him get better at playing it on a weekly basis has been just unbelievable. And every time he loads it up, we swap, you know, we pass the pad constantly. He wants me to do bits, I want him to do bits, and it's just been, that game has got so much better over time. The more that I put into it, the more I get out of it. And
that is really why I feel it's, even though Zelda is incredible, I still feel, for me, this is what I enjoyed about it, is the fact that, yeah, the more you put into it, the more you get out. And it's just, I think once you get past the sort of, you know, the 500 moons and that kind of thing, it really starts to become apparent, like, just how sort of, absolutely. It's just,
I could not agree with you more.
And it's just,
however, I can't. Zelda is one of the best games I have ever played, and that feeling of exploring that world is like nothing I've ever played before. You know, looking at the map and seeing things and thinking, what the fuck is that? And going there and finding things. The sense of discovery in that game is everything that I played gaming for. It was why I loved Ocarina of Time. Because at the time, you know, the internet wasn't there when I played Ocarina of Time. So just stumbling on along shit, like, was like, whoa, what is this? What happens here? What can I do here? Oh my God, that... And it's taken that and brought it into a world where we expect so much more, yet it still surpasses our expectation. It still goes above the hype. It still raises above all of that shit. And I think my favourite moments in that game were when I was done with the story and I was just wondering. I had no reason to complete more shrines. I you know, the combat... I wasn't totally bowled away with, you know, there was still stuff that I thought could be done better, but it didn't matter because it had that core element of everything I did in that game was a surprise and everything I stumbled across was exciting. And if I found a new part of the map that I hadn't walked across before, there was something there and it was worth doing.
Yeah, you know, that bit, that's fascinating, because I remember seeing early, you know, the preview footage and people saying, oh, it looks great, but there's loads of really empty bits. Like, what's happening there? And like, this has loads of empty bits, but there's arguably more adventure to be had in those, in some open world, in inverted commas, populated games, like, just because there's such a sense of anything could happen. You might have, like, you know, and other games, I can't think of an example, actually, but you say, like, a Saints Row or whatever, there might be loads of buildings and loads of things there, but even as, like, an empty field, you know there's just so much potential for adventure.
Yeah. I have to vote for Zelda. That makes it 3-1. And I mean, you've got a... You could challenge that, James, but I can't see me shifting my vote.
Yeah.
I love Mario, and any other year this come out, it would be the game of the year for me.
Oh, but yeah, without a shadow of a doubt.
It come out the same year as one of the best games ever made.
Mm.
That's why I can't vote for it.
It's going to be fuck all on the Switch next year, isn't there?
There really is. I mean, I'll love Yoshi, and I love, you know...
Yeah.
Not Kirby, I've never been into Metroid. Kirby, but, you know, I love the new Yoshi game, and I'll love all the other shit that comes out for it, but nothing will top this year. They've released two of the best games. Like, really, there is no better final, and there is no better game to win that final. It's... Oh, fuck.
I will say, I would argue... There were probably more individual moments of genius in Mario Odyssey. I've had more, like... Oh man, like moments in Mario Odyssey, whereas I think in Zelda, I was higher for longer, if that makes sense. I was just like constantly blown away by the world, but there was less moments of, oh, that is so clever. Oh, I can't believe that happened. Oh, that was amazing to do that. I think there's more of them in Mario. And,
but there's a sense of being in the Mario, being in the Breath of the Wild world.
No, definitely.
There's more of a sense of that.
And it's open world. And it feels like a place.
It feels like a. It feels like a world that I've been in. That's
yeah.
the most ridiculous thing to say, but it feels like a world that I've been in.
Yeah.
And you know, Mario, because of its structure and everything, it won't have that. And I don't know. Zelda's just the best.
Zelda feels like a world you have genuinely travelled and explored. Whereas if you compare it to other open world games, and maybe this is why I fell off Horizon so much, that was just a map and a game. But this, I feel like I explored it. I had an adventure. I travelled. And yeah, it's.
Oh, I travelled, boy.
Oh, I travelled. Here comes Slough.
Squash.
I think.
Okay,
like,
so that's it. I think, is it?
Okay, no.
No, go on.
I was just going to say.
Sean, he wants to drag it out.
Favourite Zelda experience. So, you know, sometimes you see, like, I think sometimes there's, like, meteor showers, and sometimes one lands and there's, like, a glow, and you can run and,
okay,
and find
it. Okay, I didn't know any of that.
Oh, there you go.
Fucking hell.
I know that.
So there's that. And then there's also, like, yeah, one time I was playing it, and it was night, and I saw just this, like, sort of bluish glow at the top of a mountain. And I was like, all right, fuck.
Oh, I know he's chained.
Yeah. And I was like, right, I'm going to go there. I want to see this. And yeah, I spent ages climbing my way up there, and it was like nearly morning, and I had a feeling that the light was going to disappear as soon as the sun came up. And then, yeah, got to the top and just sort of turned around this corner, and, you know, you're sort of like inside the peak of the mountain. There's like a sort of a dip in it, and you're sort of walking through that, this little sort of canyon, and then you come out. And it's full of those, like, blue animals. But previously you've only seen, like, the little blue rabbit, and you know that if you shoot him, you get rupees. But there's just fucking loads of them, and there's, like, a deer and something, like a fox or something, and there's just tons of them. And in your head, you're just like, oh, my God, I should fucking let rip and get a load of money. And I just stopped and just looked at them, and then they all just sort of, faded away. And I was like, shit.
Is that the first time you see one of those dragons?
Yeah.
And you're like, what the fuck? And then the music kicks in. You're like,
yeah.
Whoa. I had no idea. I must have put 80 odd hours into Zelda. I had no idea there were meteor showers.
Yeah, apparently you can, like, I have seen one. You see like a meteor fall. I can't remember what you get if you find the meteor.
It's a chest, isn't it? I'm sure.
Hell.
Is it just a chest? I can't remember.
I think so.
Yeah.
And then, like, coming across that area where it always rains. And seeing all that,
yeah,
like the big cloud build up in that one area was stunning. But for me, that moment was climbing to the top of a mountain and seeing the flying divine beast for the first time.
Yeah.
It makes me feel sick. I was that excited. I was like a kid. I saw it and I was like, that is the coolest shit that I've ever seen. Yeah. It's scary because I have no idea what it is or what it means. Is that one of those divine beasts that I keep hearing about? And then... But just seeing it, like, in the air, the scale of it.
Yeah, I don't think I'd even climbed a mountain. I think I was just wandering around, and suddenly I see a massive shadow on the ground, and I look up, and it's like, holy shit, there's a mountain.
Oh, fuck, that is good.
Yeah, that's like, I mean, like, the feeling of the fact you can climb anything, that's fantastic too. There's no, like, okay, invisible walls here. Like, if you see something, you can climb it. Obviously, it's about how much stamina you've got and whatnot, but I love that.
And, I mean, when you get to the ultimate edge, it says you can't go any further. And that is, I said that, like, I've
ever managed
that. I just went, fucking hell, like, that is an insane thing to see in this game. Mm. A real sort of, yeah, whatever. Anyway, it's 3-1. I can't see you changing anyone's mind, James.
I'm absolutely furious. Yeah, I'm joking, obviously. Yeah, it's totally fine.
Any other year, Mario Odyssey would have run away with it.
Yeah.
And I genuinely wouldn't have minded if Mario Odyssey had won. Genuinely. I just couldn't vote for it over Zelda.
It's amazing, isn't it? Zelda was like a Wii U game as one game of the year. It's like,
it's the best console, mate. That's why.
Yeah.
Ladies and gentlemen, the TCGS game of the year for 2017 is Zelda Breath of the Wild. Thank you so much for listening. I've got so much to say to you right now. I'll keep it brief because it is late. Thanks to everyone that's helped support us over the past year. We've been through a bit of a transition period with Sean leaving, with us trying Twitch streaming and YouTube videos and stuff. I'd like to say a big thank you to John Denton, who's come onto the show a few times, and same with Tamor And same with Andrew Smith. Thank you so much, guys, for helping us out when we needed you. It's been a pleasure having you on the show. I want to say a huge shout out to the Discord group. You really do mean a lot to us to know that there's a good group of people that are listening to the show and socializing together. It does mean a lot because, you know, ultimately we enjoy doing the show and we enjoy putting it out. But knowing that people are enjoying listening gives it that edge and it makes us feel nice. If you would like to thank us in a certain way for the past years of podcasting, then we have a tip jar. If you've got a spare couple of quid to fling our way, then we'll really appreciate it. What's the link, Matt?
It's paypal.me/thecomputergameshow.
And if you can't afford it, because times are tough during Christmas and I know how expensive things are, then sending us a tweet saying something nice will always brighten our day. Or alternatively, leave reviews as you know, as we usually ask you. It's all good. Any way of supporting us, like even if you've downloaded the show, that's technically enough because it means a lot to us that those figures keep going up and people seem to be enjoying it. Matt, did you have anything to add that I haven't touched on social media?
No, thanks for all the comments and the tweets and the messages. It's been an absolute riot all year, and it's been great to do.
It has been a big year for us, and I think 2018, if the current trend goes on, it'll be even bigger, and I'm excited. Have a great Christmas. Have a happy new year. We'll be back in 2018, and... You know, eventually Sean will be back full time. I have no doubt about that.
Phased return, mate. I think it's the.
I love you all. Goodbye.
Goodbye.
Bye. Cheers.